This is Audible.
Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars Rogue Squadron, X-Wing Book 1 by Michael Stackpole. You're good, Corrin, but you're no Luke Skywalker. Corrin Horn's cheeks still burned at the memory of Commander Antilles' evaluation of his last simulator exercise. The line was not meant to be cruel, but it cut deep. I've never tried to suggest I'm that good a pilot, Corrin thought. He shook his head. No, you just wanted it to be easily recognized by everyone around you. He flicked the starter switches for the X-Wing simulator's engines. Green One has four starts and is go. Ural Quirg, his Gand wingman, reported.
Green Two is operational.
Green Three and Four checked in. Then the external screens came alive, projecting an empty starfield. Whistler, have you finished the navigation calculations? The green and white R2 unit seated behind Corrin hooted. Then the nav data spilled out over Corrin's main monitor. Jump to hyperspace and rendezvous on the Redemption. Every pilot dreaded the Redemption run. The scenario was based on an Imperial attack on evacuation ships back before the first Death Star had been destroyed, while the Alliance ship, the Redemption, waited for three medevac shuttles and the corvette Korolev to dock and offload wounded. The Imperial frigate Warspite danced around and dumped TIE fighters and added bombers to the mix to do as much damage as they could. The bombers, with a full load of missiles, could do a lot of damage. The Warspite would only deploy four starfighters and a half dozen bombers, known in pilot slang as eyeballs and dupes respectively. But it would do so in a pattern that made it all but impossible for the New Republic pilots to save the Korolev. Stellar pinpoints elongated as Corrin's X-Wing fighter came out of hyperspace and the first shuttle began its docking maneuver with the Redemption.
Green One, this is Green Four.
Go ahead, Four.
By the book, are we doing something fancy?
Corrin hesitated. By book, Nawara Venn, the Green Four pilot, referred to the general wisdom about the scenario. That one pilot should race out to engage the first TIE flight, while the other three fighters remained as backup. As long as three fighters stayed at home, the Warspite dropped ships off at a considerable distance from the Korolev. When they didn't, it got bolder, and the whole scenario became very bloody. The problem with going by the book was that one pilot had to deal with five TIEs, two eyeballs and three dupes, all by himself, then turn around and engage five more. The chances of being able to succeed against those odds were slim. But what loyal son of Corellia ever had any use for odds?
By the book, Corrin replied. Keep the home fires burning and pick up after me.
Done. Good luck.
Corrin reached up and pressed the lucky charm he wore on a chain around his neck. It worked for you, Dad. Let's hope its luck hasn't run out yet. The Warspite had arrived. Corrin brought the X-Wing into a wide turn and locked the S-foils into attack position as he flew out toward the Warspite.
Green One engaging.
Whistler announced the appearance of three TIE bombers, then brought the sound up as two TIE fighters joined them.
Whistler, tag the bombers as targets 1, 2, and 3.
As the R2 unit complied with that order, Corrin pushed shield power full to front and brought his laser targeting program up on the main monitor. With his left hand, he adjusted the sighting calibration knob on the stick and got the two fighters. Corrin took a deep breath, exhaled slowly, then let his thumb hover over the firing button. At two clicks, the display on Corrin's control panel painted a yellow box around the lead TIE fighter. The box went green as the fighter's image locked into the HUD's targeting cross.
Corrin hit the button,
sending out three bursts of laser bolts.
The first missed, but the second and third blasted through the cockpit. The hexagonal solar panel snapped off and spun through space while the ion engines exploded in a ball of incandescent gas. Corin sliced through the center of the explosion. Laser fire from the second fighter lit up his forward shields, making it impossible for him to get a good visual line on the TIE. He hurried a shot and knew he hit, but the TIE flashed past and continued on toward the Korolev. Corin throttled back almost to zero. As he let the X-Wing decelerate, he heard Ural's voice.
Green 1, your velocity is down to 1%. Do you need help?
Negative, Green 2.
Corin, what are you doing?
Making the book a short story. I hope. Numbers scrolled away to zero as his missiles streaked in at their targets. One shredded the first TIE bomber. Seconds later, a Nova-like explosion lit the simulator's cockpit as the second missile hit its target. Pushing his throttle to full, Corin scanned for the third bomber. He found it going in toward the Korolev. He also found five more TIEs coming in from the other side of the Corvette. Corin fired a missile and watched it blast through the remaining fighter, then turned his attention to the new TIEs. He'd have just over a minute to deal with the bombers before they were in firing range on the Korolev. Flicking two switches, he redirected energy from his shields and lasers into the engines.
Green 1, the Warspite has exited to hyperspace. Are we released to engage fighters?
Affirmative 3, go get them. Corin frowned for a second, knowing his fellow pilots would make short work of the TIE fighters. They would deny him a clean sweep, but he'd willingly trade hitting the two TIEs for protecting the Corvette. Whistler, mark the bombers 4, 5, and 6. Acquire target 4. Corin centered the targeting box on the first of the dupes and fired a missile. Acquire 5. Acquire 6. Corin looked down at his display. Green 2, report. Nawara and Green 4 responded.
He's gone, one.
Whistler, acquire 6, but the last bomber was bearing in on the Korolev. The pilot had the wide-bodied craft slowly spinning, making it a difficult target for a missile lock. Corin switched back to lasers and pushed his X-Wing forward. Two blasts caused the TIE bomber to shy a bit, but just as Corin aimed again, the bomber jinked and cut away to port. The Corellian's eyes narrowed. Bror Jace has got to be flying that thing. Jace, a human from Typhara, was, in Corin's opinion, the second best pilot in the training squadron. Corin pulled all his shield energy forward and left his aft as naked as the shieldless TIE bomber. Following Jace through a barrel roll, he triggered a snapshot. It caught a piece of one wing, but Jace dove beneath the X-Wing's line of fire. Corin followed the other pilot's dive, but because Corin's X-Wing's rate of speed was a good 20% faster, it moved into a broad loop. By the time he finished the turnoff, the bomber came back up and banked in on the X-Wing's tail. Before it could unload a missile, Corin broke the fighter hard to port and carved across the bomber's line of fire. Jace responded by bringing the nose of the bomber up in a steep climb. He leveled off, then shrieked in at the X-Wing. Corin knew that Jace would be happy to smoke him before taking the Korolev. He hit a switch and shifted all power to the aft shields. The TIE bomber should have punched through the shields and might even have destroyed the fighter, but it hit at an angle and glanced off. The starboard wing of the unshielded bomber buckled at the impact with the X-Wing's shield, crumpling inward around the bomber's cockpit. The bomber shot into an uncontrolled tumble through the simulator's data space. Green 3, did you copy that? 3 had been shot down. The image of a lone TIE fighter making a strafing run on the Korolev appeared on Korin's monitor. The clumsy little craft skittered over the Corvette's surface, easily dodging its weak return fire. That's seriously gutsy for a TIE fighter. Or arrogant. Time to make him pay for that arrogance. The Corellian brought his proton torpedo targeting program up and locked onto the fighter. The missile shot straight in, but the pilot broke hard to port and away, causing the missile to overshoot the target. Corin brought his X-Wing over and started down to loop in behind the TIE, but as he did so, the TIE vanished from his forward screen and reappeared in his aft arc. A laser jolted a trimmer through the simulator's couch. Jinking the X-Wing right and left, Corin avoided shots coming in from behind. Who's in the fighter, he wondered. He knew Jace had been in the bomber. He was the only pilot in the unit who could have stayed with him. Except for our leader, Corin smiled. Coming to see how good I really am, Commander Antilles? He yanked the fighter's nose away from the original line of flight. The TIE stayed with him, then tightened up to close the distance. Corrin put the fighter through a twisting roll that ate up enough time to bring him into the Tie's rear. He centered his foe in the crosshairs and waited for a dead shot. The Tie juked in and out of the zone. The Tie started firing at maximum range and scored hits. At that distance, the lasers did no real damage against the shields, prompting Corrin to wonder why Wedge was wasting the energy. Then, as his HUD's green color started to flicker, realization dawned. The bright bursts on the shields are distracting my targeting. I better kill him now. Corrin tightened down on the trigger button, sending red laser needles stabbing out at the fighter. He couldn't tell if he had hit anything. Lights flashed in the cockpit, and Whistler started screeching furiously. Corrin's main monitor went black, his shields were down, and his weapon controls were dead. He looked left and right. Where is he, Whistler? Suddenly, the starfield went black, and the simulator pod hissed as it cracked open. The canopy lifted up, and the sound of laughter filled the cockpit. Doffing his helmet, Corrin hoped his three friends wouldn't notice his embarrassed blush. At least it's over, he said. The Twi'lek, Nawara Venn, clapped his hands.
Such modesty, Corrin.
Huh? Rosati, the blonde woman beside him, beamed. She had been Green 3.
You won the redemption scenario, she said. The gray-green Gand nodded. You had 7 kills. Jace is not pleased.
A brown-haired man with crystal blue eyes shouldered his way between Ural and Nawara. You're an exceptionally good pilot. Thank you, sir. The man offered Corrin his hand. Thought I had you, but when you shot out my engines, your missile caught up with me. Nice job. Corrin shook the man's hand hesitantly. The man wore a black flight suit with no name or rank insignia on it, though it did have Hoth, Indor, and Bakura battle tabs sewn on the left sleeve. You know, you're one hot hand in a tie. Nice of you to say, Mr. Horn. I'm a bit rusty, but I really enjoyed this run. A woman wearing a lieutenant's uniform touched the TIE pilot on the arm. Admiral Akbar is ready to see you now, sir. If you will follow me. Mystified, Corrin stared at the man's retreating back. I thought Commander Antilles was in that TIE. It had to be someone as good as him to get you three and leave me dead in space. Rosati looped an arm around Corrin's neck. What difference does it make? I want to know who he is, because he's decidedly dangerous. Wedge Antilles saluted Admiral Akbar and held the salute until the Mon Calamari returned it.
Thank you for seeing me, sir.
It's always my pleasure to see you, Commander Antilles.
Akbar glanced with one eye toward the other man standing in his office. General Salm was the human commander of the New Republic Starfighter Training Center at Folor.
General Salm and I were just discussing the impact of having Rogue Squadron back in the fleet. He feels you are all but ready to go. The unit roster is impressive.
Yes, sir. I wanted to speak to you about the roster if I could, sir. There have been changes made without my consultation.
You do not approve?
Wedge bit back a sharp comment.
Admiral, I've spent a good deal of the 2 years since the Emperor died touring worlds new to the Alliance because someone decided our new allies needed to see we had heroes, that we weren't the bandits the Empire made us out to be. I gave speeches, I kissed babies, I had holographs taken with more world leaders than I ever knew existed.
I was there as our propaganda machine built Rogue Squadron up into the needle that exploded the Emperor's Death Star balloons. General Salm smiled coolly.
Then you do understand why it is important that our allies have representatives within our most celebrated squadron.
Yes, sir, but I know the difference between a real fighter squadron and the monster you've made Rogue Squadron out to be. The Empire isn't going to lie down and die just because they see a dozen ships jump into a system.
Of course not.
But, General, that's what our diplomatic corps is suggesting. The Bothans want a pilot in Rogue Squadron because they found the second Death Star. We have 2 Typherons because we have to appease the 2 conglomerates that control Bacta production. Wedge took a deep breath and let it out slowly. Luke would be telling me that anger isn't good. He's right, because anger won't get me any closer to what I want.
Admiral, I'm commanding a fighter squadron. We're an elite squadron, and the only thing I want to change about it is our survival rate. You've let me have the pick of the new pilots, and I've got a fine group of them representing many different worlds.
He nodded at General Salm.
But I would hope the General would see his way clear to letting me choose my own executive officer. I want Tycho Selku.
Absolutely not!
The explosion Wedge had expected from Salm did not disappoint him.
Admiral Akbar, under no circumstances will I allow Selku to be anywhere near an active duty squadron.
Just because he isn't in prison is no reason for me to want him in my command. Wedge's jaw shot open.
Prison? The man hasn't done anything that warrants confinement. He cannot be trusted.
I believe he can. General, Tycho Selku is a hero. Much more of a hero than I am. On Hoth he fought as fiercely as anyone, and at Endor he piloted an A-wing that led a bunch of TIE fighters on a merry chase through the Death Star. He took them off our backs while Lando and I went in and blew the installation's reactor.
He got captured. He escaped. That's it. That's all you want to see, Antilles.
Meaning?
Somm's face hardened into a steel mask.
You say he escaped.
It could be they let him go.
Akbar held up his hands.
Gentlemen, please. Commander Antilles, you must admit that General Somm's concerns are valid. Perhaps if there were a way to alleviate some of them, an accommodation could be reached.
I thought of that, sir, and I've spoken with Captain Selku about it.
Wedge started ticking points off on his fingers. Tycho has agreed to fly a Z-95 Headhunter in our training exercises, with the lasers powered down so they can only paint a target, not hurt it. He's agreed to have a destruct device installed in the starfighter, so that if he goes to ram anything or goes outside space lanes to which he is assigned, he can be destroyed by remote. When not flying, he has agreed to remain under house arrest unless accompanied by Alliance security or members of the squadron.
Akbar blinked.
Where is Captain Selku currently?
He should be in the simulator complex.
He's where?
Somm's face went purple as Admiral Akbar gave orders to have Selku brought to them.
The simulator complex? Admiral Akbar repeated.
It was Horn's turn leading the redemption scenario. Tycho knows how to fly a TIE better than most pilots, so I decided to have him fly against Horn.
Akbar's lip fringe twitched.
You've taken certain liberties concerning Captain Selku already, it seems, Commander.
Wedge glanced down penitently.
I stand corrected, sir.
The door to Akbar's office opened, and a female officer led a pilot in a black flight suit into the room.
Captain Selku, Commander Antilles has told me that you have agreed to a remarkable number of restrictions on yourself and your activities. Is this true?
Tycho nodded.
Yes, sir. It's my duty. I chose to join the rebellion. Even the worst you can do to me will still be better than Imperial captivity.
The Mon Calamari picked up a datapad from his desk.
I'm signing orders to make Captain Selku the executive officer for Rogue Squadron. You're dismissed.
Yes, sir.
One last thing, Commander. What did you think about the pilots in the redemption scenario?
Wedge looked over at his commanding officer.
Admiral, if the pilots I flew against are representative of the rest of the people we have to work with, Rogue Squadron should be operational within a couple of months, and the scourge of the Empire shouldn't last much longer than that.
Kirtan Lor struggled to keep a self-satisfied smirk from ruining the stern expression he had worked hard to cultivate. He wanted to appear implacable. He needed to be merciless. What had been a blot on his record would soon be expunged. More importantly, people who had ridiculed him would learn they had grossly underestimated him, and in doing so they had doomed themselves. Kirtan held his head erect as he marched down the companionway on the Expeditious. The Carrick-class light cruiser had not been built to accommodate people of his height, so he felt some of his black hair brush against the ceiling. Kirtan, having once been told that he looked every inch a taller, younger Grand Moff Tarkin, from thinning widow's peak and lanky frame to sharp features and a cadaverously slender face, did his best to emphasize the resemblance. Even though Tarkin was nearly 7 years dead, the resemblance still earned him some respect, though any respect for an intelligence officer such as himself was in short supply on an Imperial naval vessel. Kirtan entered the antechamber of the Expeditious's brig and approached the lieutenant stationed outside the cells. I'm here to interview the prisoner you took off the Starwind. The lieutenant glanced at his datapad.
He just got back from medical.
I know. I've seen the report.
The hatch to cell 3 opened with a hiss of pressurized gas. As Kirtan Lor entered, the older, heavy-set prisoner swung his legs off the cot and sat up.
Kirtan Lor, I thought it would be you. Actually, I rather counted on it,
the intelligence officer snorted.
You thought no one but me would be able to puzzle out your whereabouts?
No, I mean, I thought even you could figure out how to find me.
Narrowing his eyes, Kirtan stared down at the old man. You, Gil Bastra, are going to die.
I figured that the moment your Tai started shooting at me.
Kirtan crossed his arms. No, you don't understand. You are dying even now.
Bastra's bushy gray eyebrows met in a frown.
What are you talking about?
When we took the Starwind, I ordered a medical evaluation for you. You may have forgotten how you once ridiculed me for using Skirtopanol to interrogate a smuggler working for the Rebellion. You told me that he died during interrogation because he was dosed with loteramine, which metabolizes the interrogation drug and can cause death.
Kirtan gave Bastra a cold smile.
Your medical scan shows elevated levels of loteramine in your blood.
I guess you'll just have to kill me the old-fashioned way, then.
Hardly. You have accelerated blastonecrosis.
What? You're lying.
No, I'm not. The loteramine is very effective in masking the tracer enzymes for the disease. The intelligence officer idly stroked his sharp chin. But there are ways to cure blastonecrosis.
Huh. And all I have to do is turn in my friends.
Looking down upon the gray lump of a man across from him, Kirtan felt momentarily embarrassed that he had once feared Gil Bastra's judgment of him.
Bastra had been Corellian security when Kirtan, as Imperial Intelligence, had been attached to the Corellian office. Bastra had been in charge of assigning officers to work with intelligence, and his lack of respect had been reflected through the personnel he sent to work with Kirtan. Every time Kirtan had felt in control, Bastra had managed to undercut him and shame him. Then Bastra had turned traitor. I know you fashioned new identities for yourself and Corran Horn and your confederates, and did a very good job of it too. Now you have lost.
The old man's head came up slowly. Kirtan saw fire still smoldering in the blue eyes.
I'll give you nothing.
You forget. I learned interrogation from a number of very good people, including yourself. I will get information from you. When I do, Corran Horn and the others will be mine. It is inevitable.
Corran Horn tried to kill his smile as he entered the briefing amphitheater. Then he saw that all the other pilots who could smile were absolutely beaming. A message on his datapad that morning had informed him that after breakfast, he was to report for Rogue Squadron's first briefing. The message itself had been neutral, but it was the first official notification that he'd made it into the squadron. Corran had never been one to hold back. He'd gone into the Corellian Security Force Academy straight out of secondary school, and continued the Horn family tradition by establishing new records in the training there. One of the last marks he surpassed had been set by his father, Hal, 20 years earlier.
Rizzati Ener waved Corran over to the bench where she sat. We made it! We actually made it! Corran's roommate, Ural, seated behind them, leaned forward. Ural learned your redemption run had the highest score of our training cycle. Corran flashed the Gand a big smile. He still couldn't get used to the fact that his roommate always referred to himself in the third person. But this time, he was far more interested in the message than in the way it was delivered.
Who came in second?
Bor Jace, I bet.
The Gand shook his head. Gavin Darklighter beat Bror.
The kid beat Jace?
Corran glanced over at the brown-haired 16-year-old pilot from Tatooine, who sat talking with the black-furred Shistavan and Wolfman, Sheel.
The Twi'lek, Nawara Venn, sat down next to Ural, looping one of his brain tails back over his shoulder.
Jace isn't any happier about it than he was about losing to you.
Corran looked toward the front of the room where Bror Jace stood. Tall, slender, and handsome, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed Typharan pilot had an ego as big as an Imperial Star Destroyer. Corran smiled in Jace's direction and caught a return nod from the black-haired woman Jace was speaking to.
Ural, how did Arisi Dalaret do in the exercise?
Middle of the hunt, after Nawara Venn, and ahead of Ural.
Commander Antilles entered the room and marched down to the holographic briefing display at the front. Joining him was the mystery pilot who had flown the TIE bomber against Corran the day before, and a black 3PO protocol droid with a non-standard clamshell head. Commander Antilles began speaking.
I'd like to congratulate you on being chosen for Rogue Squadron. You all know the history of this squadron. we were given the job of killing the first Death Star. Flying the X-Wings that have become our trademark, we did it, and lost a lot of fine pilots in the process. We covered the evacuation from Hoth, fought at Gaul, and a year later at Endor, we killed another Death Star. From there, we went to Bakura and fought the Siruk. After 7 years of non-stop fighting, the leadership of the New Republic decided to rebuild and revitalize this unit. About a year ago, Admiral Akbar presented me with plans for reforming Rogue Squadron. It had become a symbol for the Alliance. It needed to live up to its legend and become once again an elite group of pilots who could be called upon to do the sort of impossible jobs we've always managed to complete. Truth be told, most of you are already better pilots than a lot of the men and women who have died in this unit. You are an eclectic bunch. Two of you had death marks against you before you joined the Alliance, and the rest of you will earn them as soon as the Empire learns you've been assigned to this unit. Over the next month, you'll get the most intensive training you've ever had. Captain Selku will be in charge of it. Commander Antilles indicated the man beside him. Captain Selku graduated from the Imperial Naval Academy and served as a TIE pilot. He joined Rogue Squadron after his homeworld of Alderaan was destroyed. He is a superior pilot, as some of you have already learned. Wedge nodded toward the droid. Imtray is our military protocol droid. He will deal with all requisitions, duty assignments, and other administrative duties. So you're all now part of Rogue Squadron. What you can expect in the future is this. Endless amounts of boredom and routine punctuated by moments of sheer terror. As good as you are, statistical studies of fighter pilots indicate most of you will die in your first 5 missions. While survivability goes up after that, the odds are not good that you will live to see the complete destruction of the Empire. Rogue Squadron will be given tough assignments and will be expected to complete them because we are the best there is. After the meeting broke up, Nawara Venn frowned.
So, two of us are already under death marks. I wonder who.
Rizzati poked him in the ribs.
You mean you aren't, Nawara? You were a lawyer, after all. Yes, and some of my clients on Kessel would doubtlessly love to kill me, but I'm not aware of having a death mark.
His red eyes narrowed.
The Shistavanan is a rough customer. I could see him being wanted by the Empire.
A voice spoke up behind them.
Actually, Mr. Venn, Rivshiel does have a death mark on him. He earned it when he slew a stormtrooper team that tried to apprehend him.
The Black Protocol droid stood over them.
Forgive me for interrupting. I am Imtray, human-cyborg relations and regulations, with a military specialty. I am fluent in over 6 million languages, and am familiar with an equivalent number of current and historical military doctrines, regulations, honor codes, and protocols.
The ends of the Twi'lek's brain tails twitched.
As well as being familiar with the personnel files of everyone in the squadron?
Why, yes.
Golden lights glowed deep in the dark hollow of the droid's face.
My primary function requires me to carry such data around with me. Without it,
Nawara held a hand up.
So you could tell us who the other person is with the death mark?
I could.
Imtray's head canted at an angle.
The other death mark was issued after the brutal murder and vivisection of a half-dozen smugglers by Mr. Corin Horn.
Laughing so hard he had to hold his stomach, Corin sat down abruptly. He only partially landed on the bench and ended up on the floor at Imtray's feet.
Ha! That's nothing!
Oral looked down at him.
Oral was not aware murder was seen as mirthful.
Corin scrambled to his feet and composed himself.
I can explain this, I really can.
He looked at the droid. Can you tap into registry files from here?
I am fully capable of a whole host of functions in that regard.
Good. See if you can pull up the death files for the names in the reports about the murders, then match them up with birth bites. As the droid's eye light started to flicker, Corin turned back to his squadron mates. The short form is this. At my Division of Corellian Security, Corsec, we had an Imperial liaison officer with enough ambition to dream about being a Grand Moff and just enough talent for dealing with regs and bureaucracy to be a severe problem. He wanted us to bear down on all rebel smuggling in the Corellian system, but we were more concerned about hunting down the kind of pirates who actually hurt folks. Glit smugglers and the like. Lure, that was the officer's name, threatened to bring us up on charges of aiding the rebellion.
My boss, Gil Bostra, decided to make up new identities for himself, my partner Ayala Wasiri, her husband Derek, and myself.
Then Gil and I made up the records for these smugglers, put out hints that they were very bad, and released reports that they'd been murdered. In a staged scene at the office, Gil accused me of having executed the smugglers, and I said I hadn't. We had what was supposed to look like a public falling out. Lure assumed we never met with each other after that. We did, and set things up so we could head away from the Empire.
Corin sighed. Lure threatened me with a death mark if I ever got out of line. The Twi'lek looked at the droid.
Do you have the records, Imtray?
I do. They have birth bites.
Convert the time of their births to military time. Reverse values for minutes and hours, then compare that to the birth date of the next person in alphabetical order. The droid made the calculations.
There is a progression.
Rizzotti patted Corin on the shoulder.
I'm happy to know you're innocent, but couldn't you have found something other than death to use to fool your imp?
Well, when you're in Corsec, you have to joke about death because otherwise it grinds you down. Besides, watching Lure read those fictional reports and react to them was funny.
Then he would find Gil Bastra's death file amusing, I take it?
Corin's jaw dropped open.
What?
There is a notice of Gil Bastra's death. It came when I asked for the data on the names in the report.
That can't be.
Oh, I'm afraid it is, sir. It was appended to Imperial Holonet transmission number A34920121.
Corin led the quartet from the briefing room.
The route to their quarters took them out of the main complex, through a tunnel, to a smaller warren of rooms and suites. This rebel base had once been an extensive mine complex on the moon, Folor, in the Kominor system. The site had been chosen because of the high level of shipping traffic that passed through it, and because of its proximity to Corellia and the core worlds. As they walked, the newest pilots in the legendary Rogue Squadron wondered aloud what their future missions might be. Rizzotti said,
I think a lot of folks believe the whole rebellion was won when Vader and the Emperor died. I'm taking the revitalization of Rogue Squadron as a sign that at least Commander Antilles and Admiral Ackbar don't share that belief. The Twi'lek had thought a lot about what the New Republic might be planning.
By defeating the Emperor at Endor, the Rebellion proved itself a legitimate power in the galaxy. Within a month after Endor, the Alliance's Provisional Council issued their declaration of a New Republic. Now, worlds joining the New Republic are doing so on their own terms, and those negotiations are far from joyous events. Princess Organa and the other diplomats have done more to strengthen the New Republic than the whole Katana fleet could do. Even so, there is a limit to what diplomats can accomplish.
Hence the reconstitution of Rogue Squadron, Corin said.
I think so, Corin.
Rizzotti frowned. What am I missing?
Corin jerked his head toward Nuwara. He's saying that the diplomats have pretty much mined all the ore they can find. The worlds who want to join us have, those who don't haven't, and those who aren't sure will need some convincing. Typhara, for example, is a source of 95% of the Bacta in the galaxy. They're neutral right now and making grand profits selling to all sides, but we want them in our camp. Putting two of their people, Jace and Arisi, in Rogue Squadron sends a message to the Typharans that we value them. The same goes for having a Bothan in the squadron.
And the unit is commanded by a Corellian and has another Corellian pilot in it.
Nuwara tapped himself on the chest.
I'm either a token Twi'lek or a token lawyer.
Rizzotti laughed. I'm a token refugee, I guess. Oral snapped a trio of fingers against his billet data card.
Oral is a token Gand.
Corin smiled.
So, if this unit is a symbol that's filled with symbols, the supposition is that we have to do something very symbolic to get more worlds to join the New Republic. You think you know what target will be coming up next, Nuwara?
It's only logical.
Both of the Twi'lek's head tails twitched in tandem.
Before too long, we'll be going after the biggest symbol of all.
A chill ran down Korin's spine. Coruscant?
The sooner it falls, the sooner the Empire falls apart.
As he began inspecting his X-Wing, Wedge Antilles tapped the underside of the smooth nose cone.
Newly refinished. Good.
He looked at the rows of TIE fighters, bombers, and interceptors painted on the side of his ship, symbols of the battles he had fought. Big Death Stars bracketed the collection of smaller ships on either side, and Sea Rook fighters started a new row above the red stripe bisecting the fuselage.
It has been a long fight, and will be longer still.
Behind him, Wedge heard the chittering voice of Zray, the meticulous Furpine tech. Imtray translated. Master Zray apologizes for not being able to fit all your kills in a space allotted. Each ship rendered in red is meant to represent a squadron worth of kills. Wedge bowed his head to Zray. It looks as good as new, if not better. Wedge finished the inspection, then mounted the ladder to the cockpit for the next squadron exercise. He brought his systems up. All monitors and indicators came to life. Tycho, in traffic control, cleared him for takeoff.
Rogue One is clear for departure.
Once outside the atmospheric containment bubble, Wedge rocketed away from the craggy gray lunar surface, sending the fighter into a gentle arc toward the horizon. Punching up a tactical scanner, he saw 11 X-Wings and one Z-95 XD trainer, the benign version of the X-Wing's little brother. He switched his comm over to the tactical frequency he shared with Tycho. Everyone green and running, Tycho.
Affirmative. Systems are go.
Flipping the comm over to the frequency shared by the rest of the squadron, Wedge announced, "Today I want you all to do some basic work on the gunnery range. Laser targets have been set up to provide you a number of flying and targeting challenges. Your run will be graded for accuracy and speed, and if you get hit, you'll lose points. Any questions?" Horn's voice squawked through the helmet headset.
"Sir, our lasers are zeroed at 250 meters, which is a little short for ground attack missions."
"Then you'll have to be a very good shot, won't you, Mr. Horn?"
"Yes, sir."
Wedge smiled. "Good. Then perhaps you'd like to go first. Mr. Korg will fly your wing."
"Yes, sir."
The enthusiasm in Horn's voice matched the energy in the roll and dive his X-Wing executed. Wedge popped his comm over to Tycho Selku.
"Captain, you'll be getting a data feed from Rogue Nine."
"It'll be interesting to watch. He's going in hot."
"That he is, Tycho. He wants to set a mark the others can't possibly hit.
I think he needs to learn a different lesson today."
Korin pulled out of his dive and skimmed the surface of Folor. He aimed the nose of his snub fighter at the paired mountains that marked the opening of the trench that served as a bombing range. A line of red lights burned on and off in sequence. Below him, the rims of countless craters flashed past. On the data screen, the mountains appeared in a light shade of green, and likely targets were red circles that began to blink when he had a clear shot at them. Whistler would turn the circles into diamonds if they proved to be hostile. The fighter shot into the trench. Tall, jagged walls rose on either side of him. Down in a valley, two red circles became diamonds, his cannons tracked, and lit up the first target, while laser fire from the GAN hit the second.
"Nice shooting, Ten. Two more targets. I've got them."
Korin climbed sharply to get at the first target, and shot it before its laser could shoot back at him. Rolling his ship to the left, he moved back to the center of the canyon, then finished the roll with an inside loop that brought him down to the second diamond. It hit him once before he took it out, but the shot did not penetrate his shields. Climbing back up, Korin arced around a corner in the trench, and took laser fire from two bunkers nearly a kilometer distant. Targets came fast and seemed to get more accurate the deeper he ran into the trench. Korin tapped his lucky charm, then forced himself to concentrate. Rolling his fighter, diving and climbing, he wove his way through the gunnery course. He didn't get every target he shot at, but fewer of them hit him. Coming around the last sweeping turn, he saw a narrowing of the canyon. Above the crevasse, four laser targets had a perfect field of fire for blowing any X-Wing out of the sky, but they couldn't shoot down into the split in the rocks.
"Nine, you need to roll."
"Negative ten. It's wide enough. A meter to spare on each side."
"If you go dead down the middle."
"If I don't, I'll be dead."
Taking a deep breath, Corrin focused on an imaginary point about 10 meters off the nose of his fighter and steered for that point. He kept in the middle of the crevasse, floating left and right as sections of the wall jutted out from one side or the other. Suddenly, the tight spot was behind him without his having left any paint on it. The wall streaked by, black and gray blurred together. Swooping up and out of the rock slit, his X-Wing spat fire. He got three gunnery stations and Ural, threading his loop, tagged the last one. Commander Antilles' voice filled Corrin's helmet.
Very impressive flying, Mr. Horn. Your score is 3250 out of a possible 5,000. You can head back to base now. Consider yourself at liberty for the rest of the day.
Yeah, I was at liberty. Liberty to be humiliated.
Muscles bunched at the corners of Corrin's jaw as he ground his teeth. He'd waited in the hangar for the others to come back to base, hoping to hear as Mark had stood through the rest of the exercise. He knew he was looking for congratulations on his great flying. Lujane Forge, a brown-haired pilot from Kessel, and her Rhodian roommate, Andorni Hui, had been the first to return. Lujane had been almost apologetic.
I got 3,300, Corrin. Andorni hit 3,750.
What?
Peshk Vrisik and Ural came back together. The ruddy-furred Bothan took great delight in reporting a score of 4,200. The Gand had been very quiet, and when he finally spoke, he said,
Quirk scored 4,050.
That answer told Corrin something very strange was going on. In calling himself by his family name, Ural had shown that he was ashamed of his score. He should have been ecstatic about it. Each pilot had scored better than Corrin, and most had done so by over 1,000 points. On subsequent runs, I might score up in that range, he thought. But not the first time out. That's not possible. Unless...
Corrin jogged over to where Whistler had plugged himself into a recharging outlet. Whistler, at the start of our run, you set up a communications link with someone. Who?
The droid's holographic projector began to glow. A miniature image of Wedge Antilles floated between them.
You sent him my sensor data, right? I know I didn't prohibit it.
The little droid shifted to a warning tone. The pilot turned and saw the rogue leader come through the MagCon bubble. Time to get some questions answered. He ducked beneath the nose of Wedge's X-Wing and snapped to attention as the commander descended the ladder.
Do you want to speak to me about something, Mr. Horn?
Yes, sir. You gave everyone else my targeting data. I flew my heart out on that course. You let the others make a run based on the things I had done.
Wedge's brown-eyed gaze did not waver.
And?
And?
It's not fair, sir. I'm one of the best pilots in this squadron, but it looks like I'm the worst.
I see. Are you finished?
No.
Well, you should be. Or you can be. Do you understand me?
The icy tone in Wedge's voice filled Corrin's guts with frozen needles.
Yes, sir.
You need to examine why you're here, Mr. Horn. You're part of a team, and you have to act like it. If I need you to shoot a trench like that and feed your data back to a Y-Wing squadron coming through, I'll have you do it. How good you are means nothing if the rest of the people in the squadron get killed. Today, the others learn to use data from a reconnaissance flight to help them through deadly territory. You learned that you're not more important than anyone else in this squadron just because you're a gifted pilot. The leader of the squadron tossed him a sharp salute.
You're dismissed, Mr. Horn.
Corrin returned the salute and spun on his heel.
Mr. Horn!
Corrin stopped. His hand rose in a salute.
Captain Selku.
The blue-eyed man returned the salute, then crossed his arms over his chest.
Still walking and talking,
sir?
Either Commander Antilles is losing his touch in dressing down recruits, or you're made of sterner stuff than I might have imagined.
Corrin's eyes narrowed.
I don't think the commander cut me any slack, sir.
Tycho held up a hand.
Forgive me, Mr. Horn. That did not come out the way I wanted. From your Corsac record and the way you excel in scenarios when you act alone, you have struck me as a loner.
Loners don't tend to like it when they're made to be a team player.
Corrin frowned.
I can work with others, but I know I can rely only on myself when things fall apart.
I can't help that attitude because it kept me alive in tough times.
Tycho pointed toward the passage deeper into Fulor base, and Korin fell into step with him.
The problem with that attitude, Korin, is that it keeps others away. It makes it more difficult for them to help you when you need it. It keeps him uncertain that you will help them when they need you.
Hey, I'll never leave a buddy in trouble.
I don't doubt that, but you define buddies on your terms. You were with the Corellian Security Force and spent a good deal of your time hunting down people who are now your allies. That transition isn't something you can make overnight.
It couldn't have been any easier for you, sir. You are an Imperial pilot.
Tycho did not answer immediately, and Korin sensed a window of vulnerability that had opened, then slammed shut.
Let's just say, Korin, that my situation was quite different from yours. Different time, different circumstances.
The truth he heard in Tycho's words cleared Korin's mind and punched through walls he didn't realize he'd erected.
You may be right, sir.
Tycho shook his head.
Forgive the little lecture. I've had an unfortunate amount of time to think about this sort of stuff.
Two Alliance security officers walked over to where Korin and Tycho stood. The female lieutenant spoke with a calm, even voice.
Captain Selku, are you ready to return to your quarters now?
The man suddenly looked very fatigued.
Yes, I believe so. Thank you for this conversation, Mr. Horn.
You're welcome, sir.
Tycho nodded to the woman.
After you. No, sir. After you.
Her tone struck Korin as all wrong. He'd assumed she had been offering to escort Captain Selku to his quarters as a courtesy. But the edge in her voice transformed her words into an order.
She's treating him like a criminal.
There you are.
Korin's head came up at the sound of the woman's voice. Just a bit taller than he was, but slender with long legs, Irisi Delaret, one of the two Typherons in the squadron, entered the hangar from the corridor.
Are you looking for me, Irisi?
She nodded.
I was sent to find you. The rest of us are in downtime, going over what happened out there.
Not enough laughs, so you wanted me to join you? He shook his head. Thanks anyway, some other time.
Irisi took firm hold of his elbow.
No, now. We want you there so we can apologize.
Korin hesitated, covering a surprise. She sounded sincere, but she was from Typhara and almost always in Bor Jace's company. He tried to figure out if she was setting him up, but the gentle way her short black hair lay against the nape of her long neck distracted him.
I'm not sure I'd be good company.
She tugged him gently toward the corridor.
Look, we all used your data because Commander Antilles told us our exercise involved doing just that. It wasn't until we made our runs that he told each of us what had happened, what he had done to you. He ordered us to say nothing to you except to report our scores. None of us felt good about what happened, and we want to make it up to you.
Convinced, he started walking with her.
So, how did you get the job of coming after me? You picked the Sabak card with the lowest value?
Irisi smiled at him, her eyes dominating a delicately sculpted face with high cheekbones and a strong jawline.
I came to get you, while Nawara Ven and Risati Iner tried to talk some sense into Bror. You'd abandon your friend, a fellow Typharon, to a conversation with a Twi'lek lawyer?
Her laughter echoed through the corridor.
What gave you the impression we were friends?
Perhaps the fact that you spend a lot of time with him.
Better the Moff you know than the Emperor's new envoy. I could never truly be friends with anyone who grew up in the wealthy Zaltan corporate culture as he did. Bror's people are known for being rather haughty and obstreperous. My people are with Zuckfra, the true leader in Bacta production and refinement.
They went down an escalator and walked across a small chamber. Beyond it lay a noisy gallery with next to no visible light, unless the bright colors of strobing neon tracery were considered lighting. Voices from dozens of human and alien throats mingled in the din. The rest of Rogue Squadron had gathered in a corner of the Tap Cafe.
Corrin spotted Gavin Darklighter first. Roar Jace and Nuwara appeared to be deep in conversation. Lujane Forge, seeing Corrin, smiled at him and rapped her mug on the table.
Corrin's here!
Stepping forward, Jace offered Corrin his hand.
I want you to know I would not have flown with your data had I known. I'll be the first to sign a letter of protest to General Song.
Gavin looked at Corrin.
What he did to you wasn't right.
Corrin smiled.
Commander Antilles had a point to make with me, and he made it. All of you being here like this, your discomfort with what happened and your desire to protest my treatment means I know you're going to be there when I need you to be. And you know I'm willing to do what I need to do to make sure our squadron can do its job. There's nothing Commander Antilles can do to us that will be worse than what the Empire has already done on hundreds of worlds.
The pilot of the Imperial Shuttle looked back over his shoulder.
Agent Lore, you'll probably want to strap yourself in. We're coming out of hyperspace to Imperial Center.
Kirtan fumbled with the restraining harness. Since Gil Bastra's death, he had furiously searched for any leads the man had offered during his interrogation that would bring the Empire closer to Corrin Horn and the other Corsec operatives under Bastra's command. They all seemed to be dead ends. In his report, Kirtan had tried to stress the positive, but hours after sending it, he had received a summons to the Imperial capital. Now he looked out at the dark world below. The Imperial Palace stood tall, like a volcano that had thrust up through the heart of the metropolis. As the ship swooped lower, he saw massive buildings armored with layers of ferrocrete and designed to house thousands of people on each level. This was Coruscant, the heart of an empire that once had boasted millions of worlds. Kirtan ran a finger along his collar to loosen it. Though logic argued against the Empire's willingness to spend the money it cost to bring him to Imperial Center just to kill him, he knew he had failed and the price for failure was dear indeed. The guards who escorted him from the ship led him to a large room, the far wall of which was constructed entirely out of glass. A tall, slender woman stood in silhouette before it.
You are Kirtan Lure.
It came not as a question, but a statement full of import. Kirtan tried to keep his voice as even. Reporting as ordered,
I can explain my report.
Agent Lure, if I had wanted your report explained, I would have had your superiors extract the explanation from you.
She paused meaningfully.
Do you have any idea who I am?
Kirtan's mouth had gone dry.
No, ma'am.
I am Isani Isard. I am Imperial Intelligence. I rule here now, and I am determined to destroy this rebellion. I believe you can aid me in my task.
Wedge Antilles smiled as the meeting with Admiral Akbar and General Salm got underway.
I think you'll see, sir, that the squadron is coming along quite well.
The Mon Calamari looked up from the datapad on his desk.
Your performance figures and exercise scores are commendable. I am now going to make an extraordinary request of you. I'm making Rogue Squadron operational within the week.
What? Wedge felt as if he'd been snared by a Stokely stun net.
It's only been a month since the roster was finalized, sir. I need more time.
Salm folded his arms.
We would all like that luxury, Commander, but we don't have it. I'm taking my Y-Wings operational in 2 weeks.
Admiral, can I at least run some astronav exercises to get my people working together?
By all means, Commander. In fact, I have the perfect assignment for you.
Akbar touched his datapad screen and the office lights dimmed.
A swirling disk of stars appeared suspended between ceiling and floor.
I will be moving Rogue Squadron from here to Talasea in the Morobi system.
Wedge's eyes narrowed.
We're going after Coruscant?
We're given little choice, really, if we wish to overthrow the last remnants of the Empire. Many of the Moths are adopting a wait-and-see attitude about the New Republic. Others have proclaimed themselves warlords and are doing what they can to consolidate their holdings with those of weaker neighbors. Any of these warlords could decide to turn his forces towards Coruscant, or Imperial Center as Palpatine renamed it, and, by taking it, proclaim himself heir to Palpatine's throne.
So we have to get there first. It seems to me that an expedient alternative is to let some Moffs push themselves forward and have Isehart deal with them. Psalm answered,
Your opinion, Commander Antilles, was heard in our councils. It was decided that leaving anyone to her tender mercies was a crime of grand proportion.
Asani Isard, often referred to as Isehart, was the daughter of Palpatine's last internal security director. She had betrayed her father to the Emperor, claiming he was going to defect to the Alliance, and he had been put to death. The Emperor elevated her to her father's position, and she had since risen to fill the power vacuum left by the Emperor's death. Wedge looked at the galactic display.
You want to see how Isehart will hit back? Gauge strength on speed and the nature of response?
Yes, as well as determine supply routes for possible disruption. From Talacia, Rogue Squadron will provide escorts to ships setting up safe worlds and supply depots. You will be but one unit of many probing the central Imperial defenses. Commander Antilles, in an effort to minimize damage done by the public profile being given your mission, we will keep your destination secret. We have an Imperial shuttle that Captain Selkul will use to bring supplies on your journey.
The display zoomed in on a star system.
The Morobe system is a red-yellow binary, and Talacia is the fourth planet in orbit around the yellow primary. The world is cool and moist, with indigenous insect and reptilian life. There are mammals there as well, feral descendants of the animals brought in for an early farming colony. Your base is on the largest of the island continents. The atmosphere is thick, fog is common, but the world is safe.
Wedge smiled. Home sweet home.
Kirtan Lore clutched his hands behind his back so they would stop trembling. I am in your debt, Madam Director, and at your service.
How kind of you to say so, Agent Lore.
Isani Isard thumbed a small device. The lights in the room slowly brightened as shields descended over the windows. The light revealed the large, sparely furnished room's high domed ceiling. It suddenly struck Lore. On such a crowded world, such wasted space is the height of luxury. Isard's pacing drew his attention. The intensity and deliberation with which she moved radiated power. Although he guessed that she was 12 years his senior, he found her attractive. Tall and slender, she was classically beautiful, with long black hair streaked with white at the temples. Fear of her, however, overrode any glimmerings of carnal desire. When she looked at him, he knew where the menace dwelt in her. One eye was ice blue. The other eye, the left one, was molten red, with fiery gold highlights. The left eye told him that any failure in service to her would be met with the bloodless retribution promised by her cold right eye. Kirtan shivered, and she smiled.
Agent Lore, your personal file has a number of interesting notations. You were rated as having a visual memory retention rate of nearly 100%.
He nodded. If I read it or see it, I remember it.
This can be a useful tool if applied correctly.
Isard's expression lost some of its hardness.
In the report about Bostra, you mentioned not using Skirtopanol during his interrogation because he had been dosing himself with loteramine. This was a precaution you learned to take because of a case on Corellia, where doing just that had negative effects, yes?
The suspect died.
Your report says you used the fact that loteramine masks the presence of blastonecrosis to confront Gil Bastra with his own mortality. When that did not prove effective, you began conventional interrogation.
Sleep deprivation, protein starvation, coercive holographic and auditory illusions taken from what I knew of him. It all proved quite promising, until the blastonecrosis began to make his whole body septic, I then initiated treatment for the condition.
And this treatment killed him.
Her eyes became mismatched slits.
Do you know why?
He had a reaction to the Bacta used to treat him?
Do you know why?
Kirtan was about to offer her the explanation the MD5 droid had given him, but he knew she would not accept it. I do not. Isard hesitated for a second, and Kirtan knew he had escaped punishment by being truthful.
What does ZX1449F mean to you, if anything?
That is the lot number of a batch of Bacta that was contaminated by the Ashern rebels on Typhara. It made its way to Imperial Center and infected nearly 2 million soldiers and citizens. It rendered them allergic to Bacta. Kirtan frowned. But Gil Bastra never was on Imperial Center.
You do not know that.
She shook her head slowly. It does not matter, because he could have run into that batch of Bacta almost anywhere. It was ordered disposed of, and I saw to it that much of it was funneled to the black market.
That, however, is not important. What is important is this. Blastonecrosis is a condition that affected roughly 2% of the people who were dosed with that lot of Bacta.
And because I ordered treatment and didn't recognize the significance of the disease, Gil Bastra died.
No!
Isard's eyes hardened.
Gil Bastra committed suicide.
What?
His reports about you are in your file. Bastra was amazingly perceptive. He wrote that you rely on your memory too much.
Trusting that retention of information can somehow compensate for an insufficient amount of analysis.
Because you know so much,
like the obscure fact about loteramine and scotapanol, you didn't probe deeply enough.
If you had, you would have known Bastra had a Bacta allergy, and he might still be with us.
She slowly exhaled.
Bastra knew he'd be dead soon. That gave him enough hope to feed you useless information.
A revelation hit Lure strongly enough to make him tremble.
I've been fooled for even longer than the 2 years I've chased Bastra and his confederates down, haven't I? Very good, Agent Lure. That falling out Bastra and Horn had was faked. I thought the reason for it was stupid and assumed they were stupid for being at odds over it. This is even better, Agent Lure. Now that this blind spot has been eliminated, letting you see more of what goes on around you, don't backslide.
Kirtan slowly nodded.
How may I serve you? Your target is the heart of the rebellion. You will be the death of Rogue Squadron.
Kirtan frowned. Excuse me? I am no fighter pilot. I know nothing about Rogue Squadron.
Ah, but you will find you have a personal stake in this.
Our source within the squadron tells us that a friend of yours is a flight leader of remarkable skill.
Corrin Horn. You see, you already know more about them than you thought you did.
Isani Isard gave him an even stare.
Do you accept being the instrument of Rogue Squadron's destruction?
With pleasure, Madam Director. Kirtan smiled to himself.
With the utmost of pleasure indeed.
Corrin forced himself to relax. Though Commander Antilles had cast the trip as an exercise in astronavigation and hyperspace jumping, deep down Corrin thought a lot was being left unsaid. The mission requirement to bring their personal gear along made Corrin think that something more than an exercise was taking place. He had been promoted to lieutenant and given the command of 3-Flight. Heading outbound from Folor's scarred gray surface, Corrin flew lead. Ural was back to starboard, while Lujain and Anderney were off to port. Tycho Selku was bringing up the rear in a captured Lambda-class shuttle, Forbidden. Corrin keyed his comm.
Let's keep it close, 3-Flight. We follow 1-Flight on this leg and 2-Flight on the next. After that, we're leading, so let's be prepared.
Whistler began counting down. Then Corrin engaged the X-Wing's hyperdrive and set back as stars filled the view screen. The first leg was to take them about an hour. The course brought them slightly closer to the core. And Coruscant. Corrin knew the Imperial capital was not their intended target, at least not for this flight. His more immediate concern was plotting the course for the third leg of the jump. While he had not been told their final destination, Commander Antilles had given him a list of 20 starting and ending points, and he had calculated the best courses he could see for making the jumps from one to the next. The direction, speed, and duration of the first leg allowed him to eliminate all but two of the courses. Whistler, bring up the course for the Morobe system. Yes, I know you did the best you could on this plotting. Freeze output there. He tapped the monitor. At the Chorax system, you have us skirting it by 0.25 parsecs. There's only one planetary mass in that system, and the sun isn't that big. Since the Chorax system comes up so early in our leg, if you pull us another tenth of a parsec closer, we should come out of hyperspace close enough to Morobe's habitable planets that we won't need to make an in-system jump to find gravity if we need it. Given the trickiness of astronavigation and hyperspace jumps, courses were frequently plotted to brush by inhabited systems. If a hyperdrive went out in mid-flight or refused to engage, it was good to be close to worlds from which help could be summoned. The first two legs of the journey ended uneventfully. Just before they made the jump to light speed, Commander Antilles shot Corrin the coordinates for the third jump. So, it's the Morobe system after all. Corrin congratulated himself as he made the jump to hyperspace he had plotted in advance. Fine, you did the calculations. The astromech started scrolling sensor data over the cockpit screen, but none of it made sense to Corrin. There's another stellar mass in the Chorax system. That's impossible. Unless... Before he could broadcast a warning to the rest of Rogue Squadron, the automatic safety cutout in the hyperdrive kicked in. The snub fighter burst through an incandescent white wall and into the outer reaches of the Chorax system. And right into the middle of a running light fight.
Lock S foils into position! Whistler, have you ID'd those ships yet?
The big ship was an Imperial Interdictor cruiser. Its quartet of gravity well projectors created a hyperspace shadow roughly equivalent to that of a fair-sized star. It wasn't there to trap the Rogue Squadron, however. Running from the cruiser, which Whistler identified as the Black Asp, was a modified Bardo-class star yacht. Corrin had seen plenty of modified yachts during his time with the Corellian security, and this one even looked vaguely familiar. Most often, the yachts were used to haul contraband. While he had no love for smugglers, he had even less for the Empire. Corrin glanced at his screen, then keyed his comm.
Ties. Squints. I mean interceptors. Looks like a dozen of them. Rogue One, what are your orders?
Wedge's voice came back cool.
Engage them, but watch the cruiser's guns.
The Interdictor and its ties were coming in. Corrin hit the trigger and his first proton torpedo sped in at its target. Another X-Wing torpedo streaked past him and raced toward an interceptor. Ural's torpedo reduced his target to fire and scrap metal.
Good shot, Ten. Scratch one squint. Cover me, I'm going after mine.
Ratcheting the throttle up to full, Corrin corkscrewed down through a roll that brought him out on an interceptor's tail. He triggered a burst of lasers that burned armor from the interceptor's wings, but failed to destroy it. The interceptor pilot came up fast and flew in a straight line to meet him. Corrin shot across the TIE's line of flight to sail in on its tail. He lined the interceptor up in the sights and blew it apart with two laser blasts.
I have your wing, Ten.
He saw Ural's X-Wing shoot ahead of him and into the ion wake of an interceptor. The Gan's first shot struck sparks and armor from the fighter's central ball. One more, Ural, and you have him.
9 and 10, break hard port. Get out of there.
Ural's compliance with Wedge's order came immediately. Corrin started to turn to port, but the vast expanse of the Black Asp's bulk filled his view screen. Then a blue bolt of ion cannon energy sizzled in and battered down the X-Wing's shield. The astromech's screams died abruptly, and Corrin was slammed against the left side of the cockpit, the stick pressing into his chest. Even without seeing the stars swirling around him like dust motes in a Tatooine sand tornado, he knew what had happened. The ion blast, in addition to shutting Whistler off, had knocked out one sublight engine. This put him into a flat spin, completely out of control. The only thing he could do was to shut his engines down and go for a restart. That was easier said than done. The emergency shutdown panel was on the right side of the cockpit. Since he was mashed against the opposite side of the panel, it remained just beyond the reach of his outstretched fingers. Gritting his teeth, Corrin levered himself off the cockpit wall with his left elbow until he could hit the shutdown panel with his right elbow. The thrumming of the port engine died, leaving him alone with the sound of his own breathing in the cockpit. He punched the reset button and hoped for the best. What he wanted to hear was the return of the engine thrum, but what he got was nothing. Without the engines, he had no power. "This is Rogue Nine. I could use some help here." Without waiting for a reply, he flipped on the proton torpedo launch circuits. Lacking sensors, his ability to hit anything was nil, but at least he could get off a shot or two. Then he saw a series of proton torpedo launches from the X-Wings explode against the Interdictor's hull. The big ship executed a roll that combined with a loop to reverse its course.
"He's running! They've driven it off! Yes!"
His jubilance died as he realized that meant the cruiser was heading back in his direction, and the surviving TIE interceptors were flying along in its wake like fledgling Minocs. "Whistler, you're lucky you're not seeing this. It'll be ugly."
"Rogue Nine, do you copy?"
"I copy."
It took a minute before Corrin recognized the voice as Tycho Selku's in the supply ship.
"This is Rogue Null. You have squints coming your way. I mark two."
Corrin craned his neck to see where Tycho and the shuttle were, but he couldn't see a thing.
"I'm naked here, so please get them off me."
"Not possible, Nine. Clear your sensors to 354.3.
"What? I'm a sitting hut here."
"So you have indicated, Nine. Clear your sensors."
Corrin punched the frequency code into the keypad.
"Done, Null."
"Happy hunting, Nine."
Corrin's targeting display came back alive and his monitor showed targeting data from Tycho's ship, the Forbidden. Beyond the display, the TIEs juked to try to shuck the shuttle, but Tycho managed to keep his sights locked on the lead interceptor. Corrin squeezed the trigger, sending two torpedoes streaking out at the lead interceptor. So intent had the Imperial pilots been on losing the shuttle behind them, they had no chance to react to Corrin's missiles. The proton torpedoes blasted through the cockpit of the first ship, ripping the craft to bits and igniting the ion engine fuel into a swollen ball of fire. The second set of missiles lanced through the fireball and blew one wing off their target. The squint exploded brilliantly, blotting out the image of the Interdictor going to light speed. Corrin popped the cockpit canopy seals after the yacht killed its maneuvering jets, and Talisea's thick fog descended over the ships. After the battle, while the X-Wing was still without power, the yacht had come back and picked him up. He jumped down to the ground, then turned as a hatch opened on the underside of the yacht and the captain descended. He was surprised to see that it was a woman, since few of the independent smugglers were female. A gun belt encircled her slender waist, and her long black hair fell to mid-back. Corrin wiped his hands on his jumpsuit.
"Thanks for the ride back here."
She returned a smile as she shortened the distance between them.
"Thanks for the save back there."
He extended his hand to her.
"I'm Corrin Horn."
Something dangerous flashed through her brown eyes.
"Are you any relation to Hal Horn?"
Was my father."
"Why?"
"Because my father was Booster Tarek. Your father hounded him and had him sent to Kessel."
"I knew this ship looked familiar. This is the Pulsar Skate."
"I can see you two have already met."
Corrin whirled around and quickly saluted Wedge.
"Yes, sir."
The woman planted her fist on her narrow hips.
"You didn't tell me who this pilot was, because you knew I wouldn't have transported him, right?"
Wedge smiled easily.
"I suspected there might have been some friction."
"How have you been, Merax?"
"Paying for spare parts and fuel."
Merax kissed Wedge on the cheek. Corrin's eyes narrowed.
"Sir, you realize the Pulsar Skate is a ship with a well-documented history of smuggling,
and that Booster Tarek is one of the more notorious smugglers who ever flew out of Corellia. Wedge cut him off with a scowl. He also helped me track down the pirates who destroyed the fueling station and killed my parents. Pirates Corsec never caught. Wedge gave Mirax a hug. Mirax isn't her father, Wedge said to Corrin. Ever since he retired, she's been running a lot of supplies for the Alliance. Giving Mirax a hard stare, he said, And Corrin isn't his father either. If he hadn't made some last-minute adjustments to the course we were taking, we'd not have ended up in the Chorax system to save you. Corrin and Mirax apologized to each other and shook hands. Wedge jerked a thumb at the pulsar skate. Mirax, do you know where your shipment was going? She shrugged.
I was supposed to rendezvous with a ship for transfer, or coordinates. According to the manifest, it was a lot of basic stuff for setting up a base. You could probably use most of it here.
I don't doubt it. Wedge fished a cylindrical comlink from a pocket of his flight suit and flicked it on with his thumb. Antilles to Imtray.
Imtray here, sir. I've been trying to reach you since we landed.
Wedge rolled his eyes skyward. I'm sure you have. No time to talk now. I need you to get a salvage crew with a lift crane over here to get Horn's X-Wing and R2 unit. You also need to get the ship's manifest from the Pulsar Skate. Find out where that shipment of supplies was going, and see if you can arrange for what we need to remain here.
Yes, sir. As I was saying, sir.
Antilles out. Wedge turned the comlink off and shoved it deep into his pocket again. Tycho said he didn't have any trouble with the droid on the trip out here, but why not? I can't imagine. Wedge tossed Mirax an abbreviated salute.
We'll talk more later, Mirax.
Corrin fell in step with his commander. Sir, Captain Selku was able to get a torpedo lock on those two interceptors.
Why didn't he shoot them himself?
Wedge hesitated, instantly putting Corrin on his guard. The Forbidden is being modified for training purposes. While it has the sensor package for concussion missiles, it doesn't carry any and couldn't shoot them if it did.
Then why didn't he take them with his lasers?
Lambda-class shuttles have lasers.
Wedge's reply came tight and laced with frustration. The Forbidden does not.
Corrin glanced down at the ground.
Commander, I saw Alliance Security escorting Captain Selku around on Folor. What's going on here?
Wedge took a deep breath.
Lieutenant, I want you to understand two things. First, I have the utmost trust in Captain Selku. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
Second, the matter to which you allude is a private one, concerning Captain Selku alone. Because of it, he has agreed to have limitations placed upon himself. Both he and I believe bringing the issue up will only serve as a distraction to the squadron.
Corrin nodded slowly.
I see your point, sir. I won't mention it to anyone else.
Good. One more thing, sir.
Yes, Lieutenant?
Corrin looked back toward the pulsar skate.
Back there, you mentioned that Corellian security never caught the pirates who destroyed the Gus Treta station and killed your parents.
My father got that case and worked hard on it. He didn't give up. He just didn't have your connections on the other side of the law.
I think, if my father had known about Booster Tarek helping you find them, he'd have cut him some slack, and Booster wouldn't have done time in the spice mines.
Wedge reached out and slapped Corrin lightly on the shoulder. Booster clearly wasn't a Jedi, nor was he Sith spawn. And the time on Kessel got him out of the business. In a more candid moment, Mirax will probably admit the 2 years he spent in the dark was good for her father. I doubt she and I will share many candid moments, sir.
Really?
I think you two would get along quite well. Our fathers openly hated each other, sir. Not the best foundation for a lasting friendship.
Sir! Sir!
Both men looked up as Imtray materialized out of the Telesian fog. Wedge said,
Imtray, good. I'll leave you to discuss the condition of his X-Wing with Lieutenant Horn. Find me after that.
Corrin read an if you can in Wedge's smile as he walked away. The droid canted his clamshell head to the side. After spouting a lot of technical details, he concluded.
Your R2 unit will be fine, sir. He shut himself down before the ion blast could do it.
Great. Now about my X-Wing. I blew a phi-inverted lateral stabilizer.
That is correct, sir. Imtray handed Corin the datapad. We'll relay the information back to General Salm. We should have the part in a month or two at the most.
Corin's jaw dropped. A month or two?
Provided they have the part and you don't get pushed back in the priority list.
Priority list?
Yes, sir. You brought your X-Wing with you and have never formally signed it over to the Alliance. Regulations state that repairs to such craft are to be made only after repairs to authorized craft have been completed. Sir, of all the members of Rogue Squadron, I would have thought you would appreciate adherence to regulations.
Regulations have their place, but not when they hurt. Can't you just scrounge the part or something?
Imtray froze in position, the flashing light in his eyes being the only indication he was still working.
Corin luxuriated in the cessation of the droid's chatter, but it went on far longer than seemed normal. The eye flashes became asynchronous, and this worried Corin a bit.
Imtray?
The eyes lit up again, and Corin would have sworn they were brighter.
I'll shoot a requisition up through channels, but I think I can find you something sooner than anything we get from command. You're a pilot. My job is to keep you flying. Consider it done. Even the voice sounded different to Corin.
Imtray, are you all right? Is the moisture getting to you?
I'm fine, sir. The moisture is no problem.
The droid turned smartly on his heel and walked away. Corin stared after him, then shivered. Wedge sat with his back against the wall of a room in what had once been Talisea's planetary governor's palace. The name sounded grander than the building it described. Built with heavy beams of dark native wood and plaster slathered over wooden slats, it reminded him of the reconstructions of primitive settlements he'd seen in museums on Corellia. The incongruity struck him as he watched his pilots sitting around a couple of tables, using their hands to describe the twists and turns they went through and what they had taken to calling the Route of Hinsara. 2 weeks after arriving at Talisea, Rogue Squadron had been assigned to rescue a downed Alliance craft on the planet of Hinsara, and in the process met a large Imperial force. 36 TIEs, 6 Interceptors, 6 Bombers, and 24 Starfighters. The X-Wing pilots had not only routed the Imperials, they had gotten clear without a single casualty.
They did a good job out there today, Wedge said to Tycho, who had joined him for a celebratory drink. Tycho smiled broadly. They did better than good. They were spectacular. If I hadn't been there, I'd think it was propaganda. The Twi'lek Nuwara Venn stood and flipped one of his brain tails over his shoulder as if it were a scarf, then wove his way through tables to where the commanding officers sat.
Forgive me, noble leaders, but we require your esteemed personages to act as a tribunal to adjudicate a question.
Wedge couldn't keep a smile from his face.
Please proceed, Counselor. Thank you, sir.
Nuwara turned back to the other pilots.
First, we have the case of the worst pilot in the unit. May I present Gavin Darklighter, who won this award by virtue of not getting anything out there today?
Gavin scowled. Wedge knew the award had to sting badly, but the Tatooine pilot was young.
We have determined there should be a punishment of some sort, to encourage an improvement in performance.
Wedge turned to face Tycho.
Ideas, sir?
Tycho held a finger up.
Strikes me that apprenticing Gavin to the best pilot, having him run errands and the like, might be an incentive.
Bror Jay smiled broadly and tugged Gavin's flight suit.
Good. You can start your service by getting me another mug of lum.
Wedge frowned.
How is it that you, Mr. Jace, are considered the best pilot? You only had 5 kills today, and Mr. Horn had 6. If we average them over the last 2 engagements, then Mr. Horn has 4.5, with you, Mr. Quirk, and me, at 2.5 each.
Nuwara smiled, flashing pointed teeth.
You have hit upon the crux of the matter, sir. Mr. Jace argues that percentages tell the true story. He killed 5 of the 6 bombers he faced, meaning he downed 85%. Mr. Horn, on the other hand, shot only 6 of 30, giving him a kill percentage of 20%.
Wedge shook his head.
This is ridiculous.
Percentages have no place in this.
Corrin stood up and glared over at Bror.
If you don't mind, sir, I'm willing to let things be figured by percentages. I'm willing to make it even, and I'll even concede this round to you.
Corrin rested his right hand on Gavin's shoulder.
What I'm willing to do is average Gavin's kills in with mine. The one he got at Chorax adds to my 9, then we split that in half. That puts us even at an average of 5 kills. You and I are both aces now, and so is he.
Kirtan Lor scratched at the reddish, raw patch of flesh behind his right ear. Rachak roseola was a virus that got to everyone who came to this world. Only time made it better. He pored over the data from Hinsara again, correlating figures and sensor tracks with known performance parameters for X-Wings. All the ships in the squadron appeared to be operating within 2 standard deviations of the mean of Rebel specifications. This data, combined with what he had been able to put together after the fight in Chorax system, brought him closer than ever to Rogue Squadron. He was sure of it. Now all he had to do was figure out where the squadron would be heading next. He knew that the X-Wings, in arriving at Chorax, had not expected to be dragged out of hyperspace. That meant their entry vector, if drawn as a line through space, would point out their intended destination. Kirtan plotted that line through his data model, then asked the computer to sort the candidate worlds according to their proximity to any world on that line. One world had a perfect correlation with that line. Kirtan smiled.
Talacia, in the Morobi system. We know where you are, Rogue Squadron. Now we will crush you.
Corrin's eyes snapped open. It was still night. He knew that no sound had awakened him, but he also knew that something was wrong. He glanced over at Ural's cot and saw that it was empty. That wasn't much of a surprise. Gans needed only a fraction of the sleep humans did. He threw open his sleeping bag and pulled on his flight suit. At the open doorway to the cottage, he crouched in the shadows. He'd have given his right arm for a blaster, but it was stored in Talacia's flight center. The unmistakable squish of mud beneath boots alerted him to the presence of someone just outside the cottage. Then the snout of a blaster carbine poked through the doorway. A leg encased in the slate-gray armor worn by stormtroopers on commando missions followed it. Corrin exploded up from his crouch, slammed his fist into the stormtrooper's throat, and flung the man into the center of the cottage. Corrin pulled the man's blaster pistol from his holster, tucked it up beneath the trooper's chin, and pulled the trigger. Corrin winced.
He who carries a blaster set on kill dies by a blaster set on kill.
Tugging the dead trooper's ammo belt free, he noticed, in addition to erg clips for the blasters, a number of pouches. Opening one, he saw compact silver cylinders and a shiver ran through him.
Explosive charges. Some must already have been set.
A noise in the doorway made Corrin spin. A stormtrooper stood there, staring down at him. Corrin groped for the blaster pistol. Then he noticed that the stormtrooper's hands were empty, and more importantly, his feet were 2 inches off the ground. Ural cast the body aside and it crumpled to the floor.
Ural apologizes for having left you undefended. Ural was out walking when the presence of these interlopers became apparent.
How many?
The Gand shook his head. 2 less. Ural saw 4 others at various points on the perimeter.
And our sentries?
Gone.
Not good. Stormtroopers travel in squads of 9. Let's figure 24 with the crew of whatever brought them here. We have to assume the others are rigging the flight center to blow. We have to warn everyone. The Gand led the way out into the misty darkness. Suddenly, Ural pressed a 3-fingered hand gently to Corrin's chest. He held up 1 finger, then signaled in a looping motion. Corrin nodded and sighted the carbine along the line where Ural had pointed. The Gand slipped to the left and immediately disappeared in the fog. Corrin moved forward, carefully pushing his way through the thick vegetation at the fringe of the compound.
About where he had expected his target to be, he found Ural crouched over a prostrate stormtrooper.
Ural unfastened the last catches on the armor, then pulled it free and handed it to Corrin.
You shall have exoskeleton too.
Corrin smiled and slipped the armor on. He strapped on this stormtrooper's gun belt too. The two blasters he now carried made him feel slow. Ural hefted the other carbine, then headed off into the night. Corrin followed, and they returned to the flight compound.
At the first room in the center, the Gan crossed to where Shield Ashistavanin lay, while Corrin approached Gavin's bed. As he laid his hand over the boy's mouth, he felt him start.
Gavin, be quiet, it's me, Corrin.
Shield awoke with a low growl, but stopped after sniffing the air. He slipped from the bed and crouched along with Corrin and the Gand at Gavin's bedside. In whispers, Corrin and Ural explained what was happening. Then Corrin looked over at the two aliens.
Since you both can navigate in the dark, you should head out to the hangar.
He passed Shield two spare clips from his belt, then stripped off one of his gun belts and shoved it at Gavin.
Gavin and I will work our way through the center here and try to attract their attention. If you get a clue to where their ship is...
The hall light went out.
Uh-oh.
Gavin shucked the pistol from its holster and the power selection lever clicked.
The two aliens left through the window, and Corrin pulled open the door, stepped into the hallway, and fired a burst. Two bolts caught one stormtrooper in the chest and tossed him backward into another trooper. The dead man's finger jerked his carbine's trigger, sending a line of bolts down the hallway. Corrin dove, slamming his shoulder into the wall. Red light flashed by the doorway near the head of the hall, the flare in a stormtrooper's eyeplate. Corrin realized that the room contained a third stormtrooper and that at least one of the squadron's pilots lay dead in bed. Corrin's second burst knocked down the stormtrooper rising from beneath the first man's body. Then the trooper in the room at the head of the hallway emerged, at the same time Gavin came through the doorway of his room.
Gavin, no!
The kid triggered one shot, while the trooper filled the hallway with a steady stream of fire. Corrin scythed the muzzle back and forth across the hallway. He heard Gavin grunt and fall behind him. His own shots cut the legs out from under the stormtrooper. The doors all along the hallway swung open. Corrin saw Nuora Venn.
The place is rigged to blow! Get everyone clear!
Corrin sprinted down the hallway, leaping over the trio of dead stormtroopers.
As he neared the hangar, Corrin heard blaster fire, which told him that Shiel and Ural had attracted plenty of attention with their flanking maneuver. He fished one of the explosive cylinders from the trooper's belt pouch and set the timer for 5 seconds. He slid the explosive cylinder across the hangar surface toward the biggest knot of commandos. The explosion scattered the stormtroopers, casting two over the generator cart they'd been using as cover. Corrin's gun came up and tracked strobing laser fire. He saw one trooper slowly begin a backward spin that was incredibly graceful. His herky-jerky landing brought Corrin back to hideous reality. A laser bolt caught him in the breast and pitched him into the shadows. He landed hard against a wall of wooden crates, and stars exploded before his eyes. He heard wood and glass break and a gurgle of a vessel emptying.
That smells like Corellian whiskey.
His mind flashed back to the endless rounds of drinks at his father's wake. He tried to lift his carbine, but he couldn't feel its weight in his hand. Then he decided to draw the blaster pistol and discovered his right arm wasn't working so well. That realization came a second or two before the laser fire silhouetted a stormtrooper standing over him. The stormtrooper lowered his carbine.
It's over for you, rebel scum.
The stormtrooper crashed down beside him. A hole in the back of his armor sparked and smoked. Wedge ran up and dropped to one knee beside Corrin.
How are you doing, Mr. Horn?
I'm as good as dead. I'm so far gone, I smell Corellian whiskey.
You do smell Corellian whiskey. You're lying in a puddle of it. The crate that broke your fall is full of Wyrern's reserve.
What? How?
Wedge shook his head as MD droids toddled over.
I don't know.
Consider solving that mystery your assignment while you recover from your wounds.
Wedge Antilles watched as Gavin Darklighter and Corrin Horn floated all but lifelessly.
He recalled his own experience in a Bacta tank. It hadn't been aboard this ship, the Reprieve, but on Home One, Admiral Ackbar's flagship, at Endor. He'd been barely conscious at the time, which he saw as a blessing. Being aware but unable to do anything would have driven him insane.
Your pilots have improved, Commander Antilles?
Wedge turned and blinked in surprise.
Admiral Ackbar, what are you doing here, sir?
The Mon Calamari clasped his hands behind his back.
I read your report and found it disturbingly clinical. I decided I wanted more information. Is the picture of what happened there any clearer?
Not yet. The basics are the same. 3 pilots seriously wounded, 1 dead, and 6 sentries dead. A number of others have cuts and scrapes. It should have been much worse. But we got all of the stormtroopers and captured the Delta DX-9 transport they came in on.
Hardly worth the cost, but a good thing nonetheless.
Wedge nodded.
The ones we captured, 2 stormtroopers and all 5 of the transport's crew, refused to talk. I have them in detention, isolated from each other. I've had an MDO and MD-1 droid engaged in postmortems of the troopers we killed. With luck, something will give us an idea where they came from.
And Talasia was evacuated.
Yes, sir. We expect Imperials to come looking for whatever got their people, so we set up some booby traps and other surprises for whoever follows us in there. The Mon Calamari nodded slowly.
What is the mood of your unit?
Wedge pressed his back against the cool transparent steel. He just wanted to close his eyes and go to sleep.
We're all stunned and exhausted. Losing Lujain Forge was a shock. Lujain was a fighter, so having her die in her sleep was, well, it just made it worse. He shook his head. That makes no sense, of course.
Akbar patted him on the shoulder.
It does make sense. We know the war is barbaric, but we try not to be barbaric in waging war. We hold ourselves to a high standard that demands we only attack legitimate military targets.
If our enemies were as honorable as we are, we'd not be fighting this war.
And in that, Commander Antilles, you have the core of the whole problem.
The Mon Calamari paced away from the viewport.
When will your people be out of the tanks?
Wedge glanced down at his chronometer.
12 hours more for Horn and Darklighter. Another 24 to 48 for Andorni Hui. I want to hold a memorial for Lujain fairly soon.
He rubbed his eyes.
Gavin will be crushed. She's been helping him sharpen his astronavigation skills.
It seems, then, nothing can be done until at least 12 hours from now. You should get some sleep.
I can rest later.
But you will rest now. Consider that an order, Commander. In 14 hours, I want to see you and your XO on Home 1. General Somm will have arrived by then.
If I'd known I could look forward to a dressing down by him, I'd have let the stormtroopers shoot me.
Ha ha ha. Yes, he can have that effect, can't he? The purpose of this meeting is not a reprimand, however.
No?
No. If we don't strike back against the Empire, and strike back hard, they might feel emboldened to continue such activity. I don't want this to happen. General Somm's bomber wing should be sufficient for exacting retribution.
If you want Rogue Squadron to fly cover for such a mission, you have us.
That was the reaction I expected from you, Commander. Now, go and get some sleep.
Yes, sir. Wedge saluted.
Sleep it is, and dreams of retribution will be very pleasant indeed.
Admiral Akbar pushed a button on the arm of his chair in the briefing room of Home 1, bringing up a holographic image of a small world.
Our droids have double-checked the findings of the forensic team working on the stormtroopers you captured on Talasia. They confirm that the rash on 3 of them is Rachak Rosiola.
Wedge nodded.
So they came from Rachak. But how did they know where we were?
General Somm's face darkened.
The presence of a spy in our midst cannot be discounted.
Wedge glanced at Tycho, who shook his head before replying.
Security at the base was tight. We had no unauthorized messages going in or out.
That you know of?
No, sir.
Or that you're choosing to report.
It could have been blind luck, Tycho said.
Somm looked at him.
What do you mean, Captain?
Tycho raked his hair back from his forehead.
If I'd been in command and I knew where Rogue Squadron was, I would have brought in everything I had. I suspect they just sent out stormtrooper platoons to recon uninhabited systems in the sector. One platoon found us,
and the commander decided to be ambitious and destroy us himself. Akbar nodded.
A logical conclusion. Ultimately, though, the reason the Talasea base was discovered is less important than our discovery of the source of the stormtroopers.
Wedge folded his arms. Standard Imperial response would be to move in, secure the planet, and prevent us from using it again. Psalm reached out and touched the holographic world.
We expect the Valiant, the light cruiser you ran into at Hinsara, and the Black Asp from the Chorax fight, to be used to prevent Rogue Squadron from making a quick hit and run on the Talasea Expeditionary Force. They won't be defending Rachuk.
He indicated a place on the hollow where two steep mountain chains, the edges of an extinct volcano's crater, enclosed the base like parentheses.
We have information about the locations and patrol routes of the Rachuk sector's ships. We believe the world called Vladette should be open to a reprisal strike, and Grand Isle, here, is the place to hit.
Corrin's first glimpse of Vladette after coming out of hyperspace was a blue ball streaked with white and stippled with dark green.
I think we ought to take it and keep it, Whistler. It looks a lot more pleasant than Fog World ever did.
Ahead of him, speeding in at the planet, two of Psalm's Defender Wing squadrons of Y-Wings flew with an escort of four X-Wings each. Corrin and Ural were assigned to Warden Squadron, Champion Squadron, with General Psalm flying lead, and Guardian Squadrons were to go in first and soften things up so Warden could sweep through unmolested. The base was situated within an extinct volcano's crater. The visual feed from Wedge's X-Wing showed four Y-Wings swooping in at the northern edge of the crater. Each of the craft launched a pair of proton torpedoes, then peeled off. The rippling series of explosions cast smoke, rock, and burning plants into the air. Where there had been a gentle curved dip in the volcano's rim, there was now a sharp, jagged rift. Then Corrin watched as Wedge flew in. Wedge's X-Wing plunged through the smoke.
Tighten it up, Deuce.
The laser shots from a quartet of TIE starfighters illuminated the air behind him as he came into the crater beneath the shield's protective dome. He immediately inverted and dove toward the base of the crater. Wind whistled from the S-foils. One TIE pilot tried to follow him, but the hexagonal wing slowed it considerably, and it started to dip toward the jungle carpeting the crater floor. The pilot did the only thing he could to avoid a crash. He picked up speed and shot away. Wedge hit the trigger and the quad lasers converged to blow bits of TIE fighter all over the Grand Isle landscape.
Vaped one!
He saw a smoking TIE slam into a crater wall, then heard Broar's voice.
You're clear, leader.
Thanks, Deuce. Report, three.
Nora Venn replied.
Four got a pair. Island is blind to my sensors.
Rogue leader to control. Champion is clear to run.
Through the gap lumbered the Y-Wings to start their strafing and torpedo runs. Then Wedge heard Tycho from command control aboard the Iridane.
Control to Rogue leader, we have trouble.
Go ahead, control.
Two ships. Carrick-class cruiser and a Lancer-class frigate are in our exit vector. Iridane is beginning a withdrawal.
Wedge felt his stomach fold in on itself. Lancer-class frigates had been the Imperial Navy's solution to the threat posed by snub fighters. All of 250 meters long, the boxy ships were studded with 20 gunnery towers, each one sporting a quad laser array. The X-Wings were fast enough to elude the Lancer, but there was no way the Y-Wings could outrun it or fight it. Wedge glanced at his fuel monitor. He didn't have enough fuel remaining for both a fight with the Lancer and the run home. General Psalm's voice came over the comm.
Rogue leader, screen Warden and Guardian squadrons and get them out of here. Champion will buy you the time.
Negative, General. Champion will die that way. Rogue may die if we hit the Lancer and you break out.
I'm making this an order, Antilles.
Rogue squadron takes its orders from Admiral Akbar, General.
Rogue leader, this is Nine.
Not now, Nine.
Commander, I know how we can get the Lancer. Worst case, we lose one ship. What is he babbling about?
Easy, General. Go ahead, Nine.
Ships have to close to 2.5 clicks to get a firing solution for a proton torpedo. A Y-Wing getting that close to the Lancer will be vaped. An X-Wing can get in and send targeting data to the Y-Wings. Same thing Captain Selku did in the Forbidden at Chorax. The proton torps can hit the target at just over 14.5 clicks.
That just might work.
Wedge pulled back on the X-Wing's stick and started up toward the waiting Imperial ships. I'll make the run.
Negative, Antilles. Rogue Leader, this is 9, outbound. Release Warden Squadron to me. Under no circumstances. Release the squadron to me. I'm outbound, and I'm gonna play tag with that Lancer. This is treason, 9. I'll have you shot.
Wedge heard Corrin reply to Psalm.
As long as it's Warden Squadron that's doing it, I don't mind a bit. 9 out. Antilles, do something.
He's got the altitude, General. Release the squadron to him. Corrin keyed his comm. Okay, Wardens. This is how we become heroes. Timing is critical here.
Got it, 9.
Corrin looked at his scanner. Sensors put him 18 clicks out from the Lancer. Okay, Whistler. At full power, I'll do 6 clicks in the time it takes the missiles to catch me. That means they have to shoot when I hit the 6-click mark. Looks like we're all lined up and ready to go. He keyed his comm. Wardens, on my mark. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Mark, launch torpedoes! The comm came live with fire reports. As the clamor died, Corrin heard,
Warden 3, torpedoes away!
As his ship streaked in toward the Lancer, he could see strings of green laser bolts stretch out toward him as the gunners tried to track him. 12.25 seconds from impact. Corrin tossed the X-Wing into a weaving flight. Wave after wave of laser energy lashed out from the Lancer, but neither slowed nor deflected him as his snub fighter sliced through the troughs and curled around the crests. There was no missing his target. The hull of the frigate, Whistler identified it as the Ravager, was a blur as it flashed past. The torpedoes had been within a half second of catching him when he snapped up and around the Ravager. Even as they started to correct their courses to follow him, they slammed into the Lancer and detonated. The first half dozen explosions buckled the blast shields and evaporated the transperisteel viewports. Decks ruptured, and the growing fireball at the center of the ship consumed atmosphere, equipment, and personnel with a rapacious appetite. Kirtan Lor's shuttle came out of hyperspace a second before the spread of proton torpedoes hit the Ravager. The shuttle pilot frantically punched in commands on his console.
I don't know what happened here, but I'm reading a Corellian blockade runner out there and a number of Alliance fighters. I'm taking us into the Expeditious now.
The fear in the man's voice almost overwhelmed Kirtan's sense of mission.
While you're running, Lieutenant, capture me as much communications chatter as you can. Do you have any survey probes?
Launch one. But probes would only confirm what Luhr already knew. The fighters were Rogue Squadron.
As soon as he boarded the Expeditious, Kirtan learned that Director Isard had ordered that he be brought to the Pyrea system immediately. The Pyrea system was one of the systems he had pinpointed as a possible candidate for rebel strikes. Borlaeus was the name of the inhabited world in that system. The Empire maintained a small base there, overseen by General Evier Derricote. Kirtan raised an eyebrow. The orders came from Imperial Center. From Director Isard? He asked Rojan, the captain of the Expeditious. Rojan nodded. Kirtan thought for a moment. Take us out of this system. If we pick up some escape pods from the Ravager before we jump, I have no problem with that. The Navy captain smiled.
Thank you, sir.
No thanks are needed, Captain. We are all in this together.
Kirtan refrained from smiling despite the feeling of power growing in his chest.
I trade time for loyalty, something I did not know how to do on Corellia. With every lesson I learn, I become more deadly to the Rebellion. The more deadly I am to the Rebellion, the more useful I become within the Empire. Usefulness translates into power, and in the Empire, power is the very stuff of life.
As Irisi, Rizzati, and Nuora Vin crowded into his quarters, Corrin pushed himself back on his bunk, leaning against the bulkhead.
What brings you guys here?
Rizzati sat down at his feet.
We just heard you were confined to quarters and could be facing a court-martial. How are you doing?
Corrin shrugged. I'm fine.
Irisi Dalar had brushed black bangs away from her face as she sat on Ural's bed.
Aren't you angry? To be treated like this after what you did? Corin was surprised to hear his own answer. I guess I'm not angry. General Somme has no choice but to prefer charges. What I did was pretty stupid and very risky. And I put one of his squadrons in jeopardy. Rosati smiled. I, for one, want to thank you for what you did out there. That Lancer would have killed a lot of us if we tried to take it out the normal way. The Twi'lek nodded.
The traditional rogue squadron way, leaving bits and pieces of X-wings scattered around.
Irisi frowned at Nawara. We have a new tradition now, and Corin's action is a glorious part of it. We've had 3 missions, and we've lost none of our pilots.
Irisi, we have lost a pilot.
Corin scratched at his chest where he'd been shot. We almost lost 3 more on Talisea. Don't start thinking we're invulnerable.
I'm not. Even so, our kill rates and repair rates are better than ever before. I don't doubt we'll have missions that will push us to the limit, but if statistics have any truth in them, we've not been burning up all our luck on our missions.
Speak for yourself, Corin winked at her. At the bank of luck, I've hit my credit limit. But hey, the 3 of you should be downstairs having fun. Go on, have a good time.
Rosati stood and slipped an arm around Nawara's waist.
We'll be going then. We'll let the others know you're doing fine. She looked at Irisi. Coming?
In a minute.
The 2 left, obviously a couple now. Then Irisi crossed the narrow room and took Rosati's place at the foot of Corin's bed. All of a sudden, it seemed to Corin that the cabin, which was none too big to begin with, had become much tinier.
Corin, I just wanted to let you know that I feel I owe you a debt it will be very hard to repay. I knew I wasn't going to make it. I'm not the best pilot in this unit, and I was certain I would die fighting against the frigate. And then you did what you did, and I felt as if a great crushing weight had been lifted from me.
Leaning forward, she rested her hands on his knees.
I feel very close to you now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, probably better than you think. She smiled.
You feel it too?
Corin sighed. I've felt it, but I'm not sure about the wisdom of getting involved with someone inside the unit.
Rosati and Nawara don't seem to have trouble with it.
I know, and I think they're good for each other.
Is there someone else?
No, there's no one else. For the past several years, my emotional life has been a bit, unstable. He let out a deep breath and rose from his bunk. Right now, though, I'm exhausted enough that I'd be no good to either one of us. She laughed and kissed him lightly on the mouth.
I accept what you're saying. Have sweet dreams.
She turned in the open hatchway and came face to face with Mirix Tarek. The smuggler's daughter smiled politely.
Excuse me, I didn't realize I was intruding.
I was just leaving so Lieutenant Horn could get some rest. He's confined to quarters, and I don't believe that order allows civilian visitors.
Mirix tapped the datapad writing in a sheath on her left forearm. I have permission to visit from his commanding officer.
Mirix watched Irisi walk away, then shoved the plastic case she was carrying into his stomach none too gently.
What's this?
Mirix flopped down on Ural's bed.
Wedge said you might be down.
But then he didn't realize the Bacta Queen would be here.
I figured you might like some stuff from home, so I got this little package together.
She shrugged.
I intended it as a peace offering.
Corin opened the box. In it, he saw a half dozen data card issues of magazines from Corellia, as well as 2 tins of spicy smoked Nerf and a bottle of Wyrin's Reserve whiskey. Mirix rolled on her side and rested her head on her hand. Below the whiskey is a Rishkati. I had to substitute some ingredients, but I think it turned out pretty good. The dark brown sweet cake was traditionally reserved for birthdays, anniversaries, or other momentous occasions.
Where'd you find the Vuelu nuts to put into it?
Around.
Around? Yeah, around. There's a thriving black market in Corellian goods out there. That blasted protocol droid of yours has, or had, 2 cases of Corellian whiskey, and he's been doling it out to me in 1 and 2 bottle lots.
Corin broke a corner of the moist, flat cake and handed her a piece. In keeping with the tradition, he said, "We share this riscati in the same way we share our celebration of life."
"To the celebration of life."
He took a bite.
"This is wonderful."
"Even if it was made from smuggled ingredients?"
"Even more reason to eat all the evidence. Want more?"
"Thanks, but I need to get back to the skate."
She looked at her datapad. "I have about 6 hours until I pull a run forward."
"Are we going to fly cover for you?"
"Nope. I'm using my wits and guts to get me through."
She rose and kissed him on the cheek.
"See you when I get back."
The hatch eclipsed her as it closed.
It struck him that while he had been relieved when Irisi left, he wished Mirax had stayed.
Wedge's feelings about the briefing on Home One had started bad and quickly went to worse. It hadn't helped that he'd had no time to pull Admiral Akbar and General Salm aside to work out some sort of compromise on Corin's case.
The white-furred Bothan in charge of the briefing took the podium and the lights dimmed.
"I am General Lauren Crethe, and I am now going to brief you on the mission that will open the way to Coruscant for our valiant forces."
Crethe told them that the world, codenamed Black Moon, had a small base which supported 4 heavy ion cannons and had 2 squadrons of TIE fighters. The defenses struck Wedge as odd. Too much for an out-of-the-way world, but too little for a world that would put them perilously close to Coruscant. Vladette, a sector headquarters, had only had 4 TIEs on the ground, 2 ion cannons, and a set of shields, but not enough power to bring both cannons and shields online at the same time. The Bothan general went on and described his proposed mode of attack. It consisted of using the Emancipator, one of 2 Imperial Star Destroyers that had been captured at Endor, to batter down the shields. General Salm's defender wing would then go in to pound the Imperial facilities, with Rogue Squadron keeping the TIEs away from the bombers. Once ground resistance had been weakened, transports would land Alliance troops and complete the conquest. The success of the operation was predicated on bringing the shields down. While Wedge didn't want to think General Crethe was being stupid, his reliance on bombardment from space seemed remarkably short-sighted. After the briefing, the room emptied quickly, leaving Wedge, Salm, and Akbar alone before the illuminated podium. Admiral Akbar clapped his webbed hands together.
"So, I imagine you would like to discuss the charges General Salm will bring against Corin Horn."
Wedge nodded. "I think it would be best."
"Let's save the trouble. Forget the charges."
"Excuse me?" Salm held his hands up.
"If I pushed for a court-martial, I'd be a fool and Horn would sit out this assault on Black Moon. I still think the whole Rogue Squadron is out of line, but I believe things are going to go badly at Black Moon. With Horn and the rest of your pilots there, maybe things won't end up becoming a nightmare."
General Derricote, the lumpen commander of Imperial forces in the Pyrrhea system, fitted his face with a smile as he addressed Kirtan Lure.
"You found everything you needed for your survey of our defenses, Agent Lure."
"My security review proved satisfactory. You have done very well to keep this base secure. You also work harder than any other officer I've seen since the Emperor's death."
"I am all for the Empire."
"You are all for yourself."
Kirtan tapped the datapad built into the man's desk.
"I took the liberty of pulling the secret files from your datapad. You truly are an artist. You duplicate requisitions, append intricate routing tags to them, and send them off to multiple commands, each of which believes you are under its care. You have successfully drawn enough fuel and ordnance to maintain 4 squadrons of TIE fighters. Since only 2 are here, I have to assume the others are at the Alderaan biotic site?"
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"That facility was a tax loss and was later abandoned. Since Alderaan was disciplined, the market for Alderaanian goods has blossomed. My conservative estimate is that if you've been operational for 2 years, you should have cleared 2 million credits. Your overhead is low because the Empire is subsidizing your operation." The general steepled his fingers.
Think of it as our operation.
I could think of it as my operation, General. I do not think I could hold it for long, however. In going back over your security system, I noticed evidence of what could have been Alliance tampering with HoloNet messages. Derricote's eyes grew hard, and he sat up straighter at his desk.
Bothans. They make runs at all HoloNet communications. I feed them data, and it keeps them happy.
The man's physical transformation surprised Kirtan. Just by sitting up, Derricote had assumed the look of a man who could run a covert agricultural enterprise. He wanted me to underestimate him, Kirtan thought. Derricote touched the screen on his datapad.
Frequency of hits and length of contact is up. Should I correlate that to your visit, Agent Lore? Or shall I just assume both the Alliance and Empire taking an interest in my little home is a coincidence?
Kirtan's eyes narrowed. The Pyrea system is one of a number that could be conduits into the core for the Alliance.
But they don't know about my defenses.
Two more squadrons of TIE fighters will mean little to them. Derricote smiled.
I tell you what, son. You leave the defenses here to me. You're an intelligence officer, not a military genius.
Kirtan pointed to the datapad. I saw nothing in there to indicate you're a military genius, sir. Derricote tapped the side of his head with a thick finger.
That's because I'm smart enough to know that the only data that is safe is the data stored up here. I've anticipated a move against Borlaeus ever since I found the biotic station in working order, and I've planned accordingly. They're expecting to snuff a candle here at Borlaeus, but when they come, they'll get burned by a nova.
Korin's X-Wing came out of hyperspace in the shadow of the Emancipator. The former Imperial Star Destroyer's dagger-like profile stabbed deeply into the image of the world he knew only as Black Moon. Beyond the Emancipator, he saw the Eridane, where Tycho directed traffic control, and two modified bulk cruisers. The Mon Vala was home to Salm's Defender Wing, while the Korolag was the launching platform for the 8 assault shuttles that would ferry down the Rebel ground troops.
Rogue Leader, I have no enemy ships on scan, but the base does have a shield up.
Thanks, Nine. Rogues, form up to escort Defender Wing.
Korin kicked the X-Wing over in a lazy roll that brought him above the Star Destroyer. All at once, the capital ship started pulsing out salvo after salvo of turbo laser and ion cannon shots. Red bolts burned down through the atmosphere to slam into the Imperial base's shielding. The surrounding jungle began to burn, ringing the base with fire. The few working monitors in Borlaeus' underground command center showed satellite views of the attacking fleet and the fiery circle on the planet's surface. Derricote looked over at one of the technicians at the shield controls.
Shield status, Mr. Harm.
Still at 100%, sir.
Good. Begin a step back in random percentages of power. When you hit 75%, cut to 50. When their salvos slacken, go down to 20, then 5, then 0.
Kirtan felt fear trickle through his guts. You are confident they won't level this place. They took Vladette down to the foundations.
Which is why we are below the foundations, Agent Lore.
Kirtan cringed at the sound of the blast. I trust you know what you're doing.
As you have no choice, I appreciate your confidence.
Derricote rubbed his hands together.
If the rebels want this place, they're going to pay my price to get it.
Korin focused on the tactical screen, then spoke to Whistler.
Their shields are failing fast. We'll be going in next.
But as Whistler's triumphant bleat heralded the collapse of Black Moon's shields, Korin heard Tycho's voice.
Rogues, this is direct from General Creefay. You will escort the assault shuttles down to the planet. Say again, Control? Defender Wing is ready for its sweep.
The disbelief in Wedge's voice resonated in Korin.
Rogue Leader, Creefay sees that as an unnecessary delay. The Y-Wings have been ordered home. You are to escort his shuttles in.
General Creefay's voice growled through the comm channels.
Resistance is ended. time to claim our prize.
Corrin's stomach flip-flopped.
I don't like this.
Nine, this channel is for military use, not opinions.
Corrin closed with the boxy assault shuttles dropping away from the corollary,
thinking, what is wrong here?
The answer to his question came a nanosecond before an azure ion bolt lanced up from the ground and hit the first assault shuttle. A full kilometer above the ground, the shuttle crashed into a renewed energy shield and exploded. Whistler wailed out a warning. The tactical screen showed multiple fighter contacts heading up out of launch tunnels around the shield dome perimeter. It also reported that the shield was 200% higher than before. One ion blast sliced in at pre-flight, cutting through the vector the squint should have been using to engage the X-Wings. A second blast hit the Emancipator and played over it like a thunderstorm on a prairie. A third lanced up at one of the shuttles.
Two, report!
Dead air answered Wedge's call. Tycho's voice came on through the static.
Rogue Leader, we have no contact with Rogue Two.
Damn, Pesh caught that one,
Corrin realized. He heard Wedge's voice.
Full evasive rogues. Control, get the shuttles dancing.
Corrin launched a torpedo at one approaching interceptor. Then let a second have a full burst of laser fire. The glare of lasers against his shields hid the results of his shooting, but Whistler reported one interceptor destroyed and another damaged. In seconds, he shot past the line of interceptors, rolled and dove back at them. The squints, reduced from 8 to 6, split up and moved to engage single X-Wings. An immediate problem captured his attention.
12! Break to port, now!
Anderny's X-Wing juked left, but the squint riding her exhaust stayed with her.
Weave, 12!
The Rodian sent her X-Wing into a corkscrew maneuver. And the interceptor's first shots went wide of their mark. Then the aft end of the ship came back around, and the squint's fire ripped through the engines as the ship burst into flame. Bloodlessly, Corrin vaped Anderny's killer. Part of him wanted to cheer at having exacted revenge for him, but he overrode those emotions. He could no more allow himself to luxuriate in the death of an imp than he could afford to mourn his comrade. The Emancipator took two more hits, and the Mon Vala took one. Then Corrin saw a string of green laser bolts slicing across his flight path.
Moral hit!
Corrin whipped the X-Wing up and over in time to see his wingman's ship break apart.
Ural!
The X-Wing disintegrated. He saw Ural float free just before a piece of the fighter's S-foil sliced through his right arm, taking it off above the elbow.
Control! 10 is extra vehicle! Get someone down here to get him!
9, Emancipator reports the zone is too hot for rescue operations.
Convince them, Control!
Wedge's voice came on to the frequency.
Control, I have 3 and 8 extra vehicle. We need help here. I'm on it, Rogue Leader. It'll be done.
3 and 8, Corrin thought. That's Nowara and Arisi. 2 dead and 3 more out of the fight. A new voice broke through Corrin's headset.
Control here, Rogues. Good news, your rescue's on the way. Bad news, we have 2 squadrons of squints coming in from Planetary North. ETA 2 minutes. Shuttles are heading to hyperspace now.
Corrin keyed his comm.
Rogue Leader, 2 squadrons of squints against a half dozen of us is going to be ugly.
He heard Bror Jace's voice.
9, if you can't handle your 4, I'll take them.
Corrin ignored Jace's jibe as Wedge interrupted.
Trim it, Rogues. We're here protecting our own. Your mission is to screen our people till pickup.
In the distance, Corrin could see the white triangular hull of the Forbidden motionless in space. The pilot had brought the ship in close to where Nowara Vin was floating, then used a rescue tractor beam to pull him inside the emergency hatch. The Corellian brought his X-Wing up and around, then flew toward where Ural hung in space.
10 is here, Forbidden.
Thanks, 9. I have the coordinates. On my way.
That's Tycho's voice, Corrin realized.
Cap, is that you?
Guilty, 9. You have 4 squints closing on your position. Deal with them before I get there, please.
You got it.
Corrin shivered. The only thing more stupid than engaging 4 interceptors with a single X-Wing was flying an unarmed shuttle into a hot zone to pick up pilots.
A smile slowly crept across his face.
It's only stupid if we die doing it. Otherwise, it's heroism. And I can be a hero today.
He jammed his throttle full forward. The squints took shots at him, but his evasive maneuvers made them miss. His torpedo poured through one interceptor and exploded, spitting shrapnel in all directions from an incandescent cloud. Knowing he was pushing his luck, Corrin rolled the X-Wing and dove after another interceptor. Whistler screeched a warning about the return of the other two interceptors, but Corrin ignored it. He triggered one burst of lasers and clipped one of the squint's wings, but it sailed on. The pair of interceptors were firmly on his tail.
Nine here. I could use some help.
Blue bolts shot back toward the ships following him. And for a half second, Corrin felt utterly disoriented. Blue beams meant ion cannon shots, but the planet had been behind him, not in front of him. And the ion cannons on the ground wouldn't be shooting at TIEs in any event.
You're clear, Nine.
Corrin brought his ship around, and suddenly everything became clear. Defender wings, Y-wings, climbed through the dogfight, blasting away at interceptors with wild abandon. What the slow ships lacked in grace, they made up for in sheer firepower. Their entry into the fight destroyed or disabled a half dozen interceptors.
They're running!
Psalm's voice came through the comm.
No celebrations. With them clear, the ion cannons will open up again. Forbidden to control. I have all EV pilots.
Then he heard Wedge's voice.
Back to base for us, Rogues.
Back to base for most of us, he means, Whistler. 2 months of prep, and in 10 minutes the squadron is cut in half. Someone made some very bad mistakes here, and our friends paid for them. Wedge wasn't certain he had heard General Psalm correctly. Did you say it was just as well that we failed to take Black Moon? Psalm nodded and pointed with a glass of pale blue Abrax cognac at the datapad on his desk.
Intelligence reports that the Imperial Star Destroyer Eviscerator left the Vinjaga system on a course that would have put it in at Black Moon within 6 hours after we launched our operation. Chances are very good we would have lost our strike force and Black Moon.
Wedge's jaw dropped.
The mission was a go with an Impstar Deuce within 6 hours of the target? How did that happen?
I don't know. Isani Isard has been shifting some resources around, and some admirals moved them even farther to avoid her control. It could be the Eviscerator was moved at random.
Wedge frowned.
Or Isard anticipated where we were likely to strike.
Psalm looked at him over the rim of his glass.
Or someone told her where we were going to be.
Tycho was in the dark about our destination, just as the rest of us were. And he was out there without any lasers or torps, pulling in EV pilots.
Psalm held up a hand.
Easy, Commander. I don't trust your XO, but I know he was innocent this time. I checked the logs on everyone.
A tone sounded at the door, but before Psalm could say anything, the door retracted, and Corrin Horn rushed in.
Commander, you wouldn't believe...
The grin on Corrin's face died as he saw Psalm, and he snapped to attention.
Begging the General's pardon... M'Tray just said Commander Antilles was here, sir. He didn't mention these were your quarters, sir.
Wedge could see Corrin was fit to burst.
This had better be good, Mr. Horn.
Yes, sir. If we want Black Moon, we've got it.
What?
Whistler, my astromech, collected a lot of data while we were out there, and has been running it through the programs he once used to analyze smugglers' bases for Corsac.
Psalm's face hardened.
This is an Imperial base, not some bandit's hideout.
Begging your pardon, sir, but the droid found a lot of parallels to smugglers' bases, and that gives us some new options. Whistler also pinpointed Black Moon from a star chart and is pulling up more data than we were given in our briefings. It can fall.
The Imperial shuttle Sepharium settled down easily, its landing lights strobing brightly in the Borleasian evening. Luhr saw General Derricote crest the stairs to the landing platform. He smiled.
Come to see me off? I'm honored.
Derricote returned the smile and held out a bottle.
Your visit was not as onerous as you might imagine, Agent Lure. This is a memento.
Kirtan took it. Corellian whiskey, Wyron's Reserve, no less. It looks genuine. Is it, or have you prepared this so I can poison myself and eliminate a problem for you?
Derricote opened his hands.
It is genuine, and quite costly, but I have connections that make it possible for me to obtain it. It's not poisoned because it is given in thanks. Had you not come here, the rebels might have taken me by surprise. One of these days, Imperial Center is going to be roasted alive. Rebels, warlords, either could do the job. If you need a haven when things break apart, remember that I'm here.
Wedge felt a giddy anticipation in his belly, the likes of which he'd not known since Endor. The plan he and General Salm had concocted over the last week could work, but it was risky. The door to the briefing room opened, and Admiral Akbar entered, then settled at the head of the oval table.
What have you men woven together?
Salm punched keys on his datapad, and a starfield spun from the holographic projection disk in the center of the table.
We found a way to take Black Moon.
The Mon Calamari set back.
I do not recall your having been told which world Black Moon was.
We weren't, Wedge said, and explained how they had gotten the information. Then he pointed at the starfield. Computer, isolate the triad. The starfield grew, and three stars intensified in radiance. These three systems are Merit, Vinjaga, and Pyrea. The center one, Vinjaga, is home to the Eviscerator. It is using Jaga 2 as a base to protect the concussion missile production facilities. The Merit system is home to Ord Merit. The Empire abandoned that base shortly after Endor and shifted the garrison all the way over to Corellia to help hold the shipyards there. Ord Merit is really too far away from anything substantial to be of use to us as a base. Salm hit a button and the starfield dissolved into an image of the planet.
Finally, we have Borlaeus. All the data General Creefe had about it was stolen from Imperial files by Bothan slicers. Unfortunately for us, that information was incomplete.
Wedge continued.
Back before the Empire existed, Alderaan Biotics set up a research facility on the far side of Borlaeus. It included a geothermal generation station and a local spaceport. The facilities were built underground to avoid complications from the harsh winters. The facility was shut down years ago. We suspect that the current base commander, Evir Derricote, refurbished it and has it operating to produce black market goods.
So you suspect this facility was the source of the power used to reinforce the base's shields?
Yes, sir. Wedge pointed to a faint red line linking the military base and the biotics facility. A tunnel that runs beneath the surface of the planet links the two facilities. There is a rift valley where a ferrocrete conduit links the tunnel one side to the other. This is the weak link. The generator is buried too deep to blow with proton torpedoes, and destroying it makes no sense if we intend to take the planet. Salm spoke up.
Our plan is this. We stage a feint at Jaga 2. The Emancipator and the Liberator arrive in system, just at the outer edge of the gravity well created by the seventh planet, a gas giant. They deploy my defender wing and another wing of fighters, matching the Eviscerator's complement of TIEs. The Eviscerator will deploy its fighters and move out behind their screen to engage our ships. Even at full speed, it will require 2 hours for our ships to engage each other. Our snubs won't be traveling at full speed, and our Star Destroyers will be pulling back. It will appear to the Eviscerator that, at the very least, we are reluctant to engage it. When the Eviscerator moves into position to engage us, our ships will jump to hyperspace. The Star Destroyers will head for Ord Merit, while the fighters will head for Borlaeus. The Eviscerator will be unable to follow our destroyers immediately, because of its position in the system and the presence of planets that act as natural interdictor cruisers.
Akbar's eyes half shut.
Then the Eviscerator goes to Borlaeus.
Salm shook his head.
Without her fighters? No. The TIEs cannot enter hyperspace by themselves the way our fighters can. They will have to be recovered, and that will take time. Borlaeus can take care of itself, and the feint at Vinjaga system will seem to be a ploy to keep the Eviscerator away from Ord Merit. The Eviscerator will want to go to Ord Merit,
and this will give us at least 16 hours to take Borlaeus.
The Admiral gave Salm a wall-eyed stare.
Why would the captain of the Eviscerator believe there was anything of value at Ord Merit?
Wedge smiled. We were thinking that there may be some Bothan slicers who seriously wanted to redeem themselves. We want them to plant information in Imperial networks that suggest a newly discovered facility on Ord Merit may be harboring the Katana fleet.
He felt a shiver run down his spine as he saw the effect of his words on Akbar. The Katana fleet was now a legend, though it had once been real enough. Over 100 ships slave-circuited together that had jumped into hyperspace and had never been seen again. With the Empire crumbling, possession of that fleet would make its owner the power in the galaxy. Bror Jace was the first to speak after Wedge had finished his briefing to the pilots.
This is a suicide mission.
No, Wedge answered. I want it to be anything but a suicide mission. But it will be very dangerous. We've got 6 ships and 8 pilots. I'm sorry, Ural, but without a proper prosthesis, you're not fit for this mission.
Corrin's wingmate sagged in his seat. The MD droids had fitted him with an odd device that capped the stub of his arm with what looked, and smelled, like a boiling pot of bacta. Below it, a rudimentary prosthetic arm ended in a pair of pincers.
Wedge went on. 3 of you are fit to fly, but you don't have a ship. We do have Lujain's X-Wing ready to go. If all of you volunteer for this mission, I'll choose one of you at random to fly that ship. Do you all want to go? All 3 of the pilots nodded. Imtray, randomize a choice here. The droid hummed for a moment.
Nawara Vin.
Welcome aboard, Mr. Vin. You'll fly with Mr. Jace, assuming he volunteers. The Typharon nodded. It shall be my pleasure to bring glory to the Typharon people as their representative on this mission. Gavin Darklighter raised his hand.
I'm in.
Wedge looked over at Rosati.
And you, Ms. Ina?
Someone has to break up the boys' club.
Wedge turned to Corrin.
Need I ask?
I'll go on one condition. Go or stay, Mr. Horn, no special deals. Then think of this as a tactical consideration.
Corrin set forward and rested his elbows on his knees.
I'm first into the valley.
Wedge shook his head.
That position's already filled.
You need a wingman, Commander.
Wedge looked away for a moment, then back at Corrin.
Glad to have you with us, Mr. Horn.
Corrin leaned against the simulator after completing an exercise based on the upcoming run and gave Wedge a weak smile.
We got it that time, boss, but only just barely.
That last cut is very sharp, Wedge said. Banking is the only way to make it, but leveling out for the torpedo shot is tough. The junior officer nodded.
I like the idea of popping up over the last turn and gliding on down in, but that might attract some of the ties the Bacta boy is lighting up.
Bror Jace came around the corner of Corrin's simulator.
I'll do the job.
Corrin levered himself away from the simulator.
Last I looked, I've hit more targets than you.
If this simulation is at all accurate, I will eclipse your mark by 3 kills. Wedge rested a hand on each man's shoulder.
I've not discouraged this contest because there's no way to stop you from keeping score. It's given you a competitive edge, which is good.
Wedge took a step back and folded his arms. For a moment, he looked far older than his 27 years.
I want you people to know I've flown with the best the Alliance has to offer. Luke, Biggs, Porkins, Jansen, Tycho. I don't feel their lack here. This isn't a Death Star we're going after, and this mission doesn't have that sense of urgency. Back then, we were fighting for the very survival of the Rebellion. The fact is, though, this mission is just as important.
This time, we're fighting for the future of the Rebellion.
Corrin opened the door to his quarters and hit the light switch. He was unzipping his flight suit when he noticed the blanket-shrouded lump on Ural's bunk stir. Mirax sat up and scooped long locks of hair out of her face.
How did you get in here? Your Gand friend let me in. Where'd you run into him?
Med station.
Coolant pump went in the skate and flooded the ventilation system. I got a lungful. The MDs declared me healthy, but I couldn't go back to the skate. And with you staging for an operation, there's scant free space here. Since Ural's staying with the doctoroids, he offered me his billet. She yawned. I agreed, since I assumed you'd be spending the night with the Bacta Queen. Corin blinked at her. You did? I saw the look she gave you when I showed up that day you were confined to quarters. She wouldn't be good for you. And who would? You? In your dreams, Corsac. Corin crossed over and sat at the foot of Ural's bunk. Look, Mirax, it's been a long day and tomorrow is going to be tough. She drew her knees up and hugged them to her chest.
It's going to be nasty, is it?
About the only thing we have going for us is that they don't know we're coming.
That's something, then.
Mirax reached out and touched the medallion he wore.
Is that what I think it is?
I don't know. It was my father's good luck charm.
Corin took it off and passed it to her.
Mirax turned it over in her palm and peered closely at it.
It's a jet cred.
What?
Jedi credit.
It looks like a coin, but was really a commemorative medallion struck when a Corellian Jedi became a master.
A dozen or so would get minted and distributed to family, close friends, the Jedi's master and favored students.
Corin raised an eyebrow. How do you know so much about it? She smiled sweetly.
Have you forgotten, my dear, that I make my living by bringing that which is ordinarily rare to those who want it? Collectibles like these can fetch a fine price. How did your father get it?
I don't really know. I know my grandfather liaised with the Jedi to coordinate their actions with Corsac and had a good friend among them. He died in the Clone Wars. She handed it back to him.
I hope it's a luckier charm for you than it was for the Jedi whose face is on it.
Corin stood and smothered a yawn with his hand.
Sorry. That's not from talking with you.
I know.
It's late and the day's been exhausting.
Mirax lay back down and pulled the blanket up under her chin. Corin walked over to his bed, sat down, and kicked off his boots. He started to pull off his flight suit, but stopped when he noticed she was watching him. I thought you were going to go to sleep.
I am, but I was just wondering.
Yes?
Do you think you'll be warm enough tonight?
He was tempted.
In her arms, he could find sanctuary from the loneliness and fear he felt. But what they would be doing, he would be doing for himself. That wouldn't be right. Yeah, Mirax, I think I'll be warm enough.
Good.
Then you wouldn't mind tossing me your spare blanket, would you?
As the X-Wing shot into the sky, Mirax shivered and hugged her arms around herself. She turned away from the hangar opening and walked toward the Pulsar skate, where her Sullustan pilot, Liat Save, was working on the repaired ship.
No, Liat. I don't know where we're going because I don't know what we'll be hauling.
Have you thought of pulling a unit want list from M'Tre?
No?
She pointed at the communications console. Do it now.
Liat punched up a comlink frequency, and a holographic list featuring icons and dual buy-sell prices grew up from the holoplate in the cockpit. She scanned the list quickly. Some very odd products were showing up.
Damn, this is not good.
Tell the droid we'll buy all he has of 15 through 25. Yes, all.
Just do it.
I'll be out looking for Wedge's XO.
We have a big problem, and if I can't head it off, I've got friends who are on their way to die.
Wedge keyed his comm as the squadron came out of hyperspace and prepared for the second and final leg of their run into the Pyrea system. This is Rogue Leader. There is one final refinement to our plans that you should know about. We're going back to Black Moon. Broor's voice growled through the speakers.
You're saying, Commander, we're getting another shot at the squints who escaped us last time?
I was under the impression, Wedge thought, that we were the ones who escaped last time.
That's about the size of it.
Wedge felt confident his people would succeed in destroying the tunnel. That would allow the commandos, who were arriving in the system from a different direction, to do their jobs before Defender Wing arrived. He spoke into the comm again.
We are good, we're trained, and we know we have to succeed. With a little luck and a lot of heart, nothing can stop us.
But Captain Selku, you must tell me where they are.
Mirix waved a data pad at him.
I think the mission has been compromised.
Tycho shook his head.
It's impossible. I can't tell you where they're off to. I don't know.
How's that? You're the executive officer. You must know.
Sorry.
Who does know?
Here? Imtre.
Call him. I think he's part of it. I'll explain by the time he gets here.
After Tycho had sent for the droid, Mirax sat in a simple canvas campaign chair and cleared a stack of data cards from the proton torpedo crate Tycho used as a table. She set her data pad down.
Do you have a holoplate to project data?
He shook his head.
I've got a good imagination. What have you got?
Right after they jumped out of this system, I had my pilot pull a trade list from Imtre. It has a lot of military items and some black market stuff. There were new additions to the normal list, and all of those products were native to Alderaan. They'd become quite rare over the last 5 years, but all of them had ridiculously low sell prices.
Tycho's eyes narrowed.
It's not like they're being made anymore.
Right. Get this. None of them had buy prices. Somehow, Imtre has uncovered a source for these materials, and he's getting them for little or nothing. Now, since no one in Rogue Squadron has mentioned finding or recovering some lost trove of Alderaanian goods, and this list is current, I'm thinking the droid is projecting the availability of products following this mission.
Tycho sat back and scowled.
I can see how you made that assumption, but...
Couple it with this. There's been a rumor floating around about a new source for Alderaanian goods. But the prices have been prohibitively high. If there is a source, be it an Imperial storehouse or something else, I think Rogue Squadron is headed toward it.
Tycho rubbed his hands over his face and sighed heavily.
This doesn't look good, does it?
I've arranged to take all of these items that Imtre can provide. The list is clear right now, so the leak should have been stopped there.
Still, there is a chance the information has gotten out.
Exactly.
Mirix popped up out of her chair as the door opened and Imtre came in.
Good morning, Captain Selku. Ms. Tarek. How may I be of service?
Mirix grabbed the droid's arm.
You have to tell me where Rogue Squadron is going.
I'm afraid, Ms. Tarek, that information is classified. To provide it to you would be to compromise,
Tycho set forward.
Where are you getting the Alderaanian goods you're offering for sale?
The droid twitched. If I reveal my sources, you'll cut in on my action. No way.
The droid's tone of voice had shifted.
Mirax stared incredulously at Imtre, then turned back to Tycho. Can you believe this?
No, in fact, I can't.
I'm just protecting my profit margin here.
Tycho stood abruptly.
Imtre, shut up.
The droid's arm snapped to its side so quickly that Mirax lost her grip on him.
The clamshell head canted forward until its chin touched its chest. At the top of its neck, Mirax saw a glowing red button.
What's going on, Captain?
Tycho half shrugged.
I'm not certain, really. But the droid is in a wait state, it seems. I discovered this little trick when I was ferrying him to the Talacea system. We were in combat and he wouldn't stop nattering. I yelled at him to shut up and this happened. Until we hit the red button and reset him, he's little more than a remote with access to all Imtre's memories.
Tycho turned to the droid.
Imtre, I require the name of the system in which Rogue Squadron will be operating.
Piraeus System, Borlaeus, 4th Planet,
Location of agro-manufacturing facility for Alderaanian agricultural products with high covert trade value. Mirax's blood ran cold. Imtray, the list of products available from that facility. How many people have had access to it? Yours was the only access, Ms. Tarek. Could a copy have been made by a slicer without your knowledge? Impossible to determine an answer to that question. Mirax looked over at Tycho. The Empire could have been warned. We have to do something.
Yes, but what we do has to be the right thing. Tycho smiled. And I think I know what it is.
The X-Wings maintained calm silence as they skimmed the black surface of Borlaeus' moon. Corrin brought his snub fighter in behind and to the left of Wedge's fighter. When the horizon of the planet appeared as a white crown in space, Wedge's X-Wing shot away from the moon into the planet's gravity well. Corrin eased his own fighter into the atmosphere. The ablative shells Zray had applied to his fighters began to glow red, then came apart in a shower of sparks, giving the ship the appearance of a meteor streaking through the night sky. Flipping a switch, Corrin engaged the fuel pod pump so it would start to refill his onboard fuel tank. An error message scrolled up on his main screen. He shrugged. He'd have to run with the pod a little longer, but it wasn't any big deal. Suddenly, Nawara's voice crackled over the helmet speakers.
Leader, 12 eyeballs coming in from the west.
Corrin tightened his grip on the stick and shoved the fighter over into a steep dive.
This is it, Whistler. Keep your domed head down and enjoy the ride.
Wedge swooped his X-Wing into the narrow end of the Rift Valley as Corrin's voice cut in.
Lead, I have two hostiles coming in behind us.
Wedge frowned. The intervention by interceptors was not good. If both of the squadrons that showed up at the end of the last battle were to scramble against the rogues, no one would make it home. 9, push your speed.
As ordered.
The X-Wings came out of the canyon leading into the Rift Valley as verdant laser bolts sizzled past. Wedge pulled a hard turn to port. He pushed down on the trigger and scarlet laser fire exploded the Imperial fighter that had been on his tail. 9, report.
Go, lead, punch it. I'm coming behind.
A brilliant flash of light painted shadows against white rock with skeletal clarity. 9, what was that?
Fuel pod exploding. I had a slow leak. I jettisoned it.
Fuel status.
I'm okay.
How much?
3/4.
Wedge sent 2 proton torpedoes sizzling out to the conduit. But even as he did so, he knew they would miss high. They exploded against the canyon walls beyond the Ferrocrete tunnel. He saw the flashes of 2 more explosions below him as he rocketed away from Borlaeus. 9, report.
Mine went low. That was a Juggernaut assault vehicle down there providing that fire.
And it looked like they were reinforcing the conduit.
I saw that. I nailed a Ferrocrete mixer.
Wedge checked his scanners. We have a squadron of interceptors headed in our direction.
What do you want to do? I'm good for another run.
Another run would be suicide, 9, and you don't have the fuel to play.
Sir, I'm good for another run.
That's an order, 9, not an invitation to debate. The door to Asane Isard's office slid open, and the smile Kirtan Lor had prepared died. The Admiral's mismatched eyes prophesied doom.
Please, Agent Lor, do come in. I trust the journey from Borlaeus was not too tiring.
Kirtan shook his head, doing his best to hide any trace of fatigue.
Madam Director, I deeply regret not having completed my mission. You do?
Isard opened her hands and surprise widened her eyes.
It is true that Rogue Squadron still exists, though for how much longer is in serious debate. The attack on Borlaeus hurt them badly. But I had expected something more of you, Agent Lure. Can you imagine what that is? I cannot. No, indeed you cannot. It is because your imagination has atrophied to the point of lifelessness. Why do you think I sent you to Borlaeus?
Because your analysis of rebel strategy paralleled mine?
Kirtan Lur, are you so simple-minded to assume that if I could predict where the rebels were going to strike, I would send you, and you alone, to observe their attack?
I assure you, I do not think so highly of your martial skills.
Kirtan concentrated for a moment. You sent me to spy on General Derricote. Isard nodded almost mechanically. He has skills that are useful to me. After I received your report, I sent for him and left my own people in charge of Borlaeus.
Forgive me, Madam Director, but I've lost track of your mission for me.
Your mission, Agent Lur, is the same as it always has been. Destroying Rogue Squadron.
Then you will be sending me back out into the galaxy to pursue them?
No. You will remain here and work with General Derricote.
Kirtan started to ask a question, but instead said, As you wish, Madam Director.
No, as it must be.
She turned from him and faced the windows that looked out over the Imperial City.
There is no need to send you in their pursuit. You see, soon enough they will be here. And when they are, it will be quite the welcome you have prepared for them.
Wedge rolled his fighter to give himself a final look at Corrin's X-Wing.
Get going, Nine. Defend yourself if you can't run, but get out of here. You've done good.
While the four proton torpedoes he and Corrin had loosed at the conduit had not destroyed it, the burning ferrocrete mixer did mark the target rather nicely. Knowing surprise had been irrevocably lost. Wedge brought his fighter down in a spiral. Green laser bolts from the Juggernaut vehicle lanced up through the night at him, but Wedge dropped the fighter below the line of fire, or bounced up above it, constantly forcing the gunners to adjust their sights to catch it. 1 kilometer out from the target, Wedge reversed the engine's thrust. As the Juggernaut's laser batteries brought their beams together to burn him from the sky, the X-Wing dropped like a rock. The gunners, believing they had hit the fighter, or horrified at its uncontrolled descent, stopped shooting. The X-Wing's fall ended abruptly in a bouncing, bobbing hover barely 5 meters from the canyon floor. Stormtroopers and Masons began to scatter. Wedge pulled the trigger on his flight stick. A single proton torpedo jetted out and pierced the Juggernaut's windscreen. The craft's burning hulk silhouetted the conduit. Using the rudder pedals, Wedge rocked the fighter back and forth, peppering construction vehicles and plasteel forms with scarlet energy bolts. Scaffolding collapsed, and semi-fluid ferrocrete oozed from burning forms. He switched back to proton torpedoes and armed two, just as he vaulted his ship back into the air. The paired torpedoes blasted through the conduit, causing a shockwave that rocked the fighter. The glare from the explosion gave Wedge one last glance at the complete destruction of the target zone. Then the fireball imploded, plunging the canyon into darkness. Wedge jettisoned his empty fuel pod.
Rogue Leader here. Mission accomplished. Time to head home, Rogues. Nine is leading the way out.
Negative lead.
The anxiety in Nuwara's voice sank like ice through Wedge.
I've checked. Nine is nowhere on my forward scan.
Corrin was on his way out when he saw two squints closing on the Devonian, one of the Alliance assault shuttles ferrying troops for the ground assault. He yanked his stick back to bring the snub fighter over in a big loop.
Yes, I do know what I'm doing. If I let my dive drive me instead of burning up fuel, we'll be fine.
The dive brought him high, hot, and on an angle at the rear arc for the interceptors. Focusing his attention on the second squint, he pushed the trigger and kept it down. 4 pairs of red lasers perforated the slant-winged interceptor, blasting it apart and forcing Corrin to roll and dive to avoid the worst of the debris cloud. He couldn't see the first squint on either his forward or his rear scope. So he started a climbing loop. The interceptor appeared dead center in his aft scan and laced his aft shield with fire. Corrin's first shot hit solidly on the starboard wing. The next one took the right wing clean off.
The squint whirled off into a flat spin to port, uncontrolled and unrecoverable. He glanced at his monitor and angled his ship onto an intercept for the rest of the squadron's outbound course. Nine to Rogue Leader. I'm still here.
You're supposed to be leading, not following, Nine.
Corrin heard plenty of anger pulsing through Wedge's reply. He keyed his comm. Roger, lead. I was getting clear, but two squints made a run. Corrin figured Wedge would realize the interceptors were closing in on a transport when he picked them off. He looked at his fuel indicator. Lead, I have a problem.
I know, Nine. Your astromech just answered an inquiry I had sent. Go in on the dark side of the moon and go to ground. The atmosphere is thin, but your life support equipment can concentrate it enough for you. If you can avoid them, we'll be back for you.
As certain as taxes and as slow as paperwork, they come. With his X-Wing nestled in a frozen lava tube on the side of a volcano, Corrin watched as paired interceptors flew search patterns over the lunar surface, moving ever closer to his position. From the second he saw what they were doing, he'd ask Whistler to time the runs. They remained constant for speed and duration, which told Corrin the pilots had done exactly what he would have done. They programmed the search pattern into their navigational computers and let it run on autopilot. Which means we know where they'll be in 35.3 seconds, he thought. He nodded grimly. I'm dead, but they'll be dead sooner. The timer went to zero. Corrin hit the trigger. Two proton torpedoes streaked out from the launch tubes on either side of the X-Wing. The first one stabbed through the closest interceptor and detonated. The second overshot its target, but went off when it reached its programmed range. The interceptor began to roll through a tight downward spiral, then slammed into a basalt monolith and exploded. Shoving the throttle forward, Corrin shot his snub fighter from the lava tube. He saw other interceptors break their search patterns, but they did not immediately move after him. Spotting a pair of targets moving where the first squints had gone down, he leveled out in a small valley between the volcano and a meteor crater. Climbing at the last second, he rose up over the broad lunar plain and sent two bursts of laser fire into the belly of a squint. The starfighter obliged him by melting into a metallic fog. Damned right! Corrin pulls ahead of the Bacta boy. Green spears of laser light crisscrossed through the moon's thin air as the interceptors converged on his ship. He glanced at his fuel indicator. As much as we could teach them something about flying, it's time we change some of the rules here. He broke left and climbed, then pointed his fighter at the volcano's cone. Corrin brought the fighter down into the crater, then cut in the repulsor lift engines and powered them up so he hung suspended in the middle of the obsidian arena. Suddenly, the X-Wing shook violently, and Corrin felt his stomach turn inside out. Tractor beam. It's all over. Locked in the silence of hyperspace, Wedge balled his hands into fists. He knew they'd done everything they could within mission parameters to help Corrin. The first set of 10 interceptors had caught up with them because they had throttled back and waited. The five rogues had dispatched their foes, but the dogfight took them to critical fuel levels. They'd had to jump to hyperspace, leaving a dozen squints to hunt for Corrin. His plan was risky, and he knew Akbar would never approve it, but he also knew he couldn't abandon one of his people. The rogues could be refueled and head back out inside a half hour. With Tycho flying the shuttle and the X-Wings as escort, they'd be more than a match for the dozen interceptors in the Borlaeus system. He keyed his comm. Rogue Leader to M-Tray.
M-Tray here, sir. I have an urgent message for Bor Jace.
It's not as urgent as my orders. Get Zray set up to refuel us and get Tex mounting lasers on the Forbidden. And contact intelligence. I want any holonet data coming out of Borlaeus.
Yes, sir. Sir, we do have some information from Borlaeus. It's a hologram.
Give it to me. The monitor resolved into an image of Corrin Horn. Wedge shook his head. What?
If you're seeing this, Commander Antilles, I was left behind.
Even as the tractor beam hooked onto him, Corrin popped one proton torpedo off and watched the lead interceptor that was aimed at him evaporate. Thumbing his weapons control over the laser, he started to track the next tie. The tractor limited his ship's range of motion, but then he felt himself being turned in the right direction. The interceptor exploded as red laser bolts ripped through the cockpit. Corrin looked down at his hand and couldn't recall having hit the trigger. More laser fire transformed another tie into a fireball. Whistler started hooting frantically. Corrin hesitated, not comprehending, then flipped his comm back on. As his fighter began to rise through the volcano, picking up speed, he could hardly believe the voice he heard.
Repeat, is your hyperdrive still operational?
Mirax?
Yeah. You ready to get smuggled out of here?
Corrin's fighter fit snugly in the hold of the pulsar skate. He waited for Mirax to repressurize the hold after closing the loading bay doors, then popped his cockpit canopy open and vaulted from the X-Wing. He landed on the deck with a thump, then smiled as the hold hatch opened. Permission to come aboard, Captain Tarek.
Promise you won't tell my father?
Mirax smiled and strode across the deck to him. He'd die if he could see an X-Wing with Corsac markings in the belly of his ship. Corrin enfolded her in a hug. Your secret is safe with me. He didn't let his arms slacken until he felt her hug loosen first. And I commend you on your shooting. You popped three interceptors in no time. Mirax pulled away from him and pointed toward the hatchway. He did it, not me. The silhouette in the hatchway shrugged.
The skate is a fairly stable gunnery platform, Tycho Selku said. And the squint pilots weren't the Empire's best.
Pulling off his helmet, Corrin crossed the hold and offered the man his hand.
Still, Captain Selku, it was superior shooting.
Mirax patted Corrin on the back and let her hand linger there for a moment. Come on up to the bridge. We'll jump to hyperspace and get back to base at Nokvzor before the others do.
We will.
Corrin chuckled as he strapped himself into his seat. Then I've got an idea for some fun.
Wedge watched, puzzled, as Corrin's image continued.
I know the decision to leave me behind wasn't easy, and I harbor no ill will concerning my abandonment. To prove this to you, I pried some Wyrens reserve away from Imtray, and a Rishkati should have finished baking by the time you land.
Wahoo!
Gavin's voice echoed through the comm. Wedge keyed his comm. Horn, if you aren't dead, you will be. Corrin's image broke into laughter.
I'm happy to see you too, Commander. Welcome home.
Wedge sat back in his chair. The tumbler of liquid amber, aided and abetted by the sight of Corrin alive and unhurt, had chased the chilly dread from his belly and melted the stress in his shoulders and neck. Putting his feet up on the table, he actually began to relax. He hefted his piece of the sweet cake.
Corrin, getting you back from Borlaeus is worthy of celebration, as is having the Alliance's hottest new pilot as a member of the squadron.
Corrin looked surprised.
Me?
No. Wedge smiled past him at the man arriving late to the celebration. Congratulations, Bror Jace. The trio of kills you got on the interceptors following us out of the Pyrea system puts you at 22 kills. You beat Lieutenant Horn by one.
The Typharon beamed, his blue eyes alive with pride.
Thank you, Commander. This is good news and helps offset what I have just heard. My great-uncle, our patriarch, is dying.
Even Bacta cannot cure old age, and I must return.
Corrin offered Bror his hand.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I'm also sorry to lose to you, but I'm not sorry about how well you did.
Nor I about your performance. Bror pumped Corrin's hand.
I would give you another chance at such a contest, but I do not want even the slightest hint of division within the squadron.
I concur. Corrin nabbed a small piece of cake from the serving tray on the table and popped it into his mouth. Everyone followed Corrin's lead, and just for a second, Wedge felt himself back on Endor. catching a hasty last meal before he and his friends went off to attack the Death Star. But it wasn't the taste of the Rishkati that brought the memory back.
No. It's the sense of unity, he thought. The core spirit. It was there before Rogue Squadron was ever formed. It was the squadron's soul, and it's still here. This is Rogue Squadron, not reborn, just continuing as it should. Wedge raised his glass, and the others joined him.
I'd like to offer a toast, my friends. To Rogue Squadron, to the friends we've lost, the battles we've fought, and the utter fear our return will bring to our enemies.
Kirtan Lur dropped to one knee before Asane Isard's life-size hologram.
Please forgive my disturbing you, Madam Director, but you said you wanted to be informed immediately of any developments.
Our agent in Rogue Squadron has provided us with some useful information. The squadron will be moving to Borlaeus, and the base will become a major staging operation.
It was also reported that the best of the new pilots, Bror Jace, will be returning to Typhara to visit his family.
Lur pulled a datapad from his desk and glanced at it. Given the precarious balance of loyalists and rebel sympathizers on Typhara, it seems to me that having a hero of the rebellion visit will not be a good thing. Since his course of travel has been communicated to us, I have prepared orders for the Black Asp to intercept him.
Isard nodded slowly, her eyes focusing distantly. Very good thinking, Agent Lur.
I have a facility that is most successful in convincing ardent rebels they really should be on our side.
This Jace will prove very useful in the future. But don't you think your Corrin Horn will be suspicious?
Kirtan thought for a moment. He will be, but he is not so single-minded that he cannot be distracted.
Good. Isard clasped her hands behind her back. I have let slip the information that you killed Gil Bastra.
What?
Along with data that suggests you are, in fact, here at Imperial Center.
Kirtan's jaw dropped. He'd seen Horn angry more than once, and knew the man to be relentless in pursuit of those who had slain other members of Corsac.
More motivation for you to succeed in Rogue Squadron's destruction.
For a second, Kirtan longed for a return to the days when he and Horn were adversaries at Corsac. They had hated each other, but the tension had not yet become lethal. Then he realized he harbored no real fear of Cornhorn's retribution. His success would mean release from her clutches.
If he knew that, of course, Horn would find a way to clone me, so he could have the pleasure of forcing me to work for Asane Isard forever. Yes, Horn could be that cruel. But he would hold himself back. Therein is his weakness. Here on Imperial Center, in Isard's domain, I have neither the compunction nor the need to restrain myself. Do come to Imperial Center, Corrin. Bring your friends and your hidden enemy with you. Imperial Center is undoubtedly the last place you ever thought you'd visit. And I will do all I can to make certain it is the last place you visit.
This is Henry Thomas. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Star Wars Rogue Squadron by Michael Stackpole. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Lars Howell. Abridgment by Treby Johnson. Rogue Squadron is a production of Lucasfilm Limited. Copyright 1996, all rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.